coincidentally hilarious.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I actually had a talk with someone about this last week where it was like, all my friends are obsessed with hearing themselves. We used to bust Mikey Terzo's balls about it all the time. Because he'd always be like, Matty, can you turn up my volume? And I'm like, actually, your volume's good, Mikey. The audience can hear you just fine. Yeah. I could tell from
everyone,
here. He's
you're
like,
Italian.
Yeah, but I can't hear me.
You're Italian. Everyone can hear you.
I know, but he's like, but I can't hear me.
Matty.
Because that's what's important,
that's
that
right.
Mikey hears Mikey, not the audience.
Right, exactly.
And Matty, Mikey can't hear himself over
Should
here. Could you turn up? Could you turn up the volume?
Go get a beer while I open up the show.
Yeah.
Go grab a booze. Yeah, go get some booze. All right.
That is James Dumont. He'll be
Jimmy
on
Dumont.
Following the retrieval of a beer.
Yeah, my good buddy Jimmy Dumont. I'm so excited to see him before I bolt town to go make this movie. www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter.
At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter.
You go to Facebook, you go to the search bar, type in The Matthew Aaron Show, and you click like, and you'll become a follower of the show, I guess, on Facebook. You can go to iTunes and subscribe with our thousands upon thousands of subscribers. I don't know if you guys listen to every show that you subscribe to, but God bless you because they all download to your iPods.
Yeah.
We're on Stitcher. You can listen to the BBC radio and
Stitcher.
Then listen to us.
BBC
and then
BBC. Hello.
We're on Stitcher. And
we have a great show today.
And
by the way, we're at 603 North Hollywood Way here, Taste Chicago in Burbank, California. I always almost say Burbank, Illinois, which is funny because nobody knows about Burbank, Illinois.
Never
like, there's like 30 people that live there. And you're from Chicago,
that's
Jimmy,
right.
And
you've never been.
No.
People in Burbank don't know
Burbank,
about.
No.
People don't even know Chuck's Comfort Cafe is in Burbank,
right.
Illinois. They're like, hey, a nice place in Oak Lawn. No. It's like 20 minutes from Oakland.
It's 20 minutes, man. I'm going to be talking like Thurzo all day.
Yeah.
The co-host, Lee Capreas here. Hello.
Well, I want to thank Joe and
Capreas.
Oh, yeah. El Capreas on Twitter.
Could I have a second, please?
No, okay. You cannot. Because we got to thank Joe for having us,
yeah,
as usual.
Taste of Chicago, you got to come over here. They got the beefs. They got the deep dish pizza. You got to do it.
That's right.
That's
been
right.
Jimmy, you know Montana?
Oh, yeah.
You guys did.
It's a fact of life.
What was the one with Joan of Arcadia.
We did Joan of Arcadia.
We bonded because his dad worked at the Como Inn. And my dad was a photographer at the Como Inn.
Really?
So my dad probably...
So you guys knew each other,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah,
that is,
well, it was just, his dad, know, your dad knew
Como
each other.
It was just like, that was like the key to the city with Joe. So
old
school. And then every time I'm in the Valley, like doing voiceover stuff here,
yeah,
every time I come to Burbank, this is my spot.
You live in the Valley?
No, the mid-city.
Oh, okay, you're too good. Yeah, I see. Jimmy's too big for the Valley.
Right.
Are you too big time for the Valley?
I'm a little snobby about the Valley. I'll be honest.
Are the schools better for the kids in...
The schools are good. The people that send their kids to schools in the Valley, not so much.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well, because...
You know what? I know some
parents.
Great Valley people,
parents,
like Melinda McGraw. Melinda McGraw is a great Valley person.
I
love
Melinda
her.
From Men of a Certain Age.
I love her. Yes,
but,
you do.
But, you know, people just were... They blocked my cousin's driveway, and
yeah,
it's just there's a lot of entitlement issues with folks in the Valley.
Yeah,
they're getting pissed on a lot.
They're California parents. They're
the
most spoiled, rotten people.
Actually,
totally,
but Jimmy kind of nailed
right.
it too. We are so pissed on here in the Valley,
yeah,
because people say, I mean, we've met girls in not the Valley, in West
right.
Hollywood or
right.
in Hollywood. They're
who
like
will not go back.
Who
to
won't
place
go back
because you live in the Valley?
Because you
right.
say to them, "I live in Sherman Oaks,"
yeah,
and they're
exactly
like,
right.
"You
Sherman
live
Oaks.
Where?
Where?
Hello."
Yeah, Sherman Oaks, where there's $3 million homes everywhere.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
the hell is your
no,
problem?
I think there's a little chip, and I think that chip leads to a little bit of entitlement.
Yeah.
So that's been my experience.
I will say
I
this,
really
though.
Dealt with okay. a lot of,
I've
know.
Met really good people in the Valley.
Uh-huh.
I've met very good people in the city, too. You're in mid-city, so
mid-city.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know where the fakest people, I think, in Hollywood are... And everyone lives there, so maybe it's just because everyone's there and you could find the most of them there, is Santa Monica.
Yeah.
That is where the big shots live. Were
but here's
or
what's
p-
funny about
Palisades.
Santa Monica, though. You can't tell the difference between a homeless person and a who,
right.
who bathed, but he surfed that morning.
Josh right. Brolin.
That, yeah. Because yeah. yeah. Chris Penn, like, you know, coked up in the middle of the morning.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Just walking down next to a guy that just shit in his pants. Right. So like that's the essence.
And you're
well,
not sure
Monica.
Which guy should
well,
have been
shopping at the same store.
Well, they have homeless guys who clearly like they're wearing clean clothes
yeah.
and they have really witty signs.
Oh, yeah.
Like you know, I've
right.
gotta, you know.
Yeah.
Well, did
really
you see what happened to Josh Brolin? When Josh Brolin has a movie coming out, he doesn't do Leno or Letterman. He knocks some guy out and gets
right.
on TMZ
yeah.
to promote his movie. God bless.
Yeah.
But Josh has Old Boy coming out, and this week he gets into a fight at O'Brien's in Santa Monica,
and, he got a fight at Del Taco in New Orleans.
You're a big Louisiana.
At Del Taco,
he bumped into a cab. He kept driving in the drive-thru, hit a cab, scratched up the back of the cab. The cab driver came out and asked him for his insurance information, and Josh threatened to beat the shit out of him.
It's okay.
Yeah, he went to town on him. So that's how Josh promotes movies. Jimmy Dumont comes on our show to promote movies. He's a little more old-fashioned.
Let's
talk the Butler. Let's talk Dallas Buyers Club on the air. We don't have to knock anyone out.
No,
it's true.
If you want to talk, if you threw anyone a beating and it was a funny characteristic, you can tell.
There's two things I want before we talk about the movies. One, I saw you yesterday, and it reminded me of something about you that I just love, and this is why you are on such a roll now. I'm convinced. The energy Dumont brings to anything. I see him at this premiere last night, and the energy you bring just to that is so infectious, it makes you want to work with a guy like
you.
That's
right. It's like the flu.
Yeah, you are the flu.
Infectious person, right?
But I didn't see Jimmy when he walked in his premiere last night. I'm sitting in my solo seat. I didn't have a date. You didn't get home to go.
No, I wasn't.
And I'm sitting in the loner seat.
And then what I do is I'm with a guest, and I have my plus one.
Yeah.
Who's an actress from Chicago? I'm trying to help these young actresses here. In a very positive,
fatherly way.
Not physical way, because my wife might be listening. So,
what a nice chat.
But the reality is that, I see him, and you know what's funny? He first posted he's going to the screening, and he's looking for a plus one. I'm like, I'm wondering if he's going to the main screening. I'm like, never mind. And then I walk up, and I see him there, and I'm like, so she goes, so what are you doing tomorrow? And I was like, I got to go be on this douchebag's radio show, this guy, Matthew, Aaron, whoever. And he turns around and so hard, and I'm like, dude, we broke the ice. This is how I've come into
a
room.
What's funny is, I didn't really hear all of it. I just heard douchebag Matthew Aaron, and I'm like, this could be anybody. I turned around, and it was Jimmy, and I'm like, Jimmy, okay.
It could be a lot of people.
It could be anybody
calling me a douchebag.
It could have been anybody. So we were yesterday, and I'm like, man, you got Dallas Buyers Club out right now, which is... That's an Oscar movie.
You got
the Butler Oscar movie. Yep. You got Bonnie and Clyde coming out, and we're going to have your daughter Sinclair on in a little bit to talk about that because she's in it.
Yeah.
And
she was the first one cast, actually.
I know, that's crazy. You were telling me that story, which we'll get to, which is really funny.
Yep.
And I'm just like, Jimmy Dumont's on a fucking roll.
You
got that James Brown pick next year.
Yeah, just booked the James Brown movie with Tate Taylor, who's directing from The Help, with Octavia in there.
Uh-huh.
And it's
and Viola, too, right?
And Viola's in there. Bozeman from 42.
Chadwick Bozeman, who's fantastic.
And I have a great scene with him, which is quite hilarious. Right. It's one of those things where, you know, I just put a lot of stuff in the can.
Yeah.
And what's funny to me is that I've been doing the same work all along.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of... kismet that all these kind of projects are kind of coming out at once.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I knew the fall was going to be a busy time, but then to kind of then, like, put it over the top with, you know, recurring on American Horror Story.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I'm on Nashville Wednesday.
With Judith Hogue.
Yeah, but normally Nashville
would
be tonight. But next Wednesday's Nashville.
Nashville, American
Horror. Great radio DJ role that you were going
to do. How much would you love to be on the role Jimmy Dumont's on now?
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's good. Yeah.
It's good to be me right now.
As he sips his Corona. Yeah. It's good to be me right now.
Yeah. It doesn't suck is what I like to say.
No, it doesn't.
So what you're saying to me, though, is you're doing the same level of work right now that you were doing when you were on West Wing.
I think I'm doing much better work.
Okay, you do. You do think you're doing better.
Was that I think I went to an amazing guy named Larry Moss who is thanked on the Oscars.
Sure.
I went to a guy named Tim Phillips who just really got me.
I know both those names. Those sound very familiar.
My audition skills.
Yeah.
On camera in particular, because now it's like I'm just booking stuff. Right. If I put it on tape, and it's you know strong and compelling.
Tell me about the tape thing. This is a big deal.
Well, it's a new wave of the business, which is that you know any. You can live anywhere now, and if the quality of your work is so strong, and the person's willing to receive your audition, it doesn't matter whether you live in Peru.
Really,
you know, that's really what it comes down to. And so, you know, because I'm bayou coastal, like I have a residency in Louisiana and Los Angeles, mostly due to trying to move back to my wife's hometown to Baton Rouge, but You know, I end up putting myself on tape at least 2 to 3 times a week.
Because you'll send stuff to New Orleans, or if you're in New Orleans, to L.A.
or New York. I mean, I've done some amazing. I've been pinned a few times for Boardwalk Empire.
Wow.
I still have friends in New York. I could say I could work locally. So the concept of working locally is a new thing, only in the sense that you now have technology where you can shoot your audition and send it over. At the end of the day, to be honest, they really just want the best actor for the job.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that makes it very hard if you're the local actor in New York or you're the local actor in Chicago or Los Angeles. Is that or you're
because if you're willing to fly out,
think about the Brits that are coming
up. But I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you send a tape to Chicago, they're doing a show in Chicago. Let's say it's Sirens, which they're doing right now with Dennis Leary.
I talked to Claire Simon about doing, you know, like, let's put a lot of Chicago actors on a Chicago show called.
You know how I feel about that. You know how I feel about that.
We'll get started.
As good as those Australian guys are at imitating every accent and nailing every role.
Listen, Jimmy and I talked about this. I know, and Jimmy, I know you got friends there. I know you got friends there, and I totally. And by the way, when I was ripping on that, and people that aren't aware, I was very upset on Facebook and on our show about how Dick Wolf made. Listen, he was so loyal to New York with Law and Order that I expected him to do the same with Chicago. Never, never.
You cannot do that.
And remember how many careers Dick Wolf started with Law and Order? Started careers. It's just like you could do the same thing in Chicago.
That's right. With an amazing talent pool that's there.
And they're not doing it.
What happened?
Folks like us who are here, like Joe's here. You know, it's like the success of we've talked about this before, though. The mark of a success of a Chicago actor is that you leave.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing.
I don't want that, though. Well, that's why I'm going home to shoot this movie, Jimmy. And, Jimmy, that's why I'm making this movie in Chicago. Because I realized I don't want to be the guy that left.
Right.
I don't want to be that guy. I want the guy that brought it back.
But you leave in the sense that you have to max out that marketplace.
Yeah.
That's what the truth is. The truth is if you're doing every third movie that's in that town, then you've maxed out your marketplace. Same thing with the guys. There's guys in Louisiana who've left now.
Well, even,
and they've come here.
Even Woody Allen did it. He left New York. I mean, it happened.
It took 40 years, but he did it.
It happens. Yeah. It happens. I understand that. But it's like, you know, they make kind of projects in Chicago, and I find them all not to be as interesting as Chicago.
Right.
Is that a fair assessment?
Fair assessment.
You want something that really speaks to the soul of the city in a certain way, and in Chicago you don't really get something that maybe we're just overly picky.
Well, I argue with this about
We know the neighborhoods.
And right.
The neighborhoods, we know what the beautiful neighborhoods are, and they're not.
Right.
It's really like a location. It's about being
a great location
manager.
I think so.
Like, let's get the location manager for Blues Brothers.
It is.
Yeah.
Let's get the location manager for Ferris Bueller's Day
Right.
Off. Let's get the location manager for every John Hughes movie.
Yeah. The way you do
that, that guy knew
the city.
The place.
That's true, but also the way you get when you're writing it, when you're writing it the way that people think and their psychology and all that is I think the internal things.
And that's why we defend Swanberg's movies all the time. I know we're a little biased towards Joe, and I know the reviews for his movies are sometimes half and half. And I think Joe knows this. I mean, I haven't talked to Joe about this, and he may be upset that I say this. But the fact of the matter is, I'm a little
all the food and drink you've had.
I'm a little more biased towards Joe Swanberg's flicks because I feel like he does Chicago justice, and I feel like maybe some of these critics aren't so fair to his movies because they don't really understand the city as well. But another point that I think Jimmy was making that I think is really good here is you can even have an average script, like these movies Vince Vaughn makes in Chicago. But the problem is all they do is...
Vaughn does average movies, really?
Yeah.
High concept, average
movies? Well, yeah. The problem with those is, I would be way cooler with the dilemma and this is a big if, film somewhere other than the Loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only place you film is the Gold Coast.
Right.
Because the North Shore is gorgeous.
Yeah. Lincoln Square. Lincoln Park. Go to Chinatown. Have you ever seen anyone film in Chinatown?
Freaktown.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Fulton
Ukrainian
Market.
Village.
You've never seen Fulton Market.
No.
The marketplace.
You've never seen Fulton Market, which is in River North. It's not that far from
gorgeous
the Loop.
Too.
And it's gorgeous. So, I feel that way. I hope you do start getting some Chicago stuff. I'd love to
see
that.
I wanted to kind of replicate what I did in Louisiana with Chicago.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. You got to have some friends over at the Chicago Fire and the Chicago PD, right?
I mean, like, Eigenberg's a good buddy of mine. He's on
Eigenberg's
that show,
awesome.
You know, it's
and he's the only guy from Chicago on the show.
That's yeah, hilarious. Right. And he's a suburbs guy too. That's
I know. He's right. He's like me from the burbs. Yeah. So he was on ER though. I think that's one of his big breaks was he got on ER and that was a real Chicago show.
The real thing that put him on the map.
Yeah.
You know, the Dave the
well, right. But I remember one of his first roles was ER, and then that was like big for him. And that's what I'm talking about. ER at least casted a lot of Chicago actors.
Yep.
For like at least smaller roles,
that's
or
right.
for the hospital
or
roles,
or gave a taste of the neighbor, even
I know.
The Chicago cop roles.
I know
they were always Chicago.
It drives me nuts. And then that's the other problem: the people they are casting from Chicago in the bit roles on these shows are just like the most good-looking people on the planet.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever been to Chicago, but we don't pride ourselves
look
on looking
we
like
look
Ford
real,
models.
This is middle America. This is normal looking.
We might have okay faces on. There's a lot of cheese and a lot of potatoes that go down. And the women are the opposite. They're blonde.
I'm the same joke. That when I was at O'Hare, one girl turns to another girl and says, "You think your ass is large." That's the product, the byproduct
that's
of
funny.
The Midwestern cheese.
Yeah.
And the
women have blonde hair and they have
and they
black
like,
eyes. That's the way I would describe their
blonde
eyes.
Blonde hair, black eyes, a wide butt.
Black eyes.
When did this role start for you, Jimmy? When did you start to go on this, you think? What was, like, the big moment?
I had an eighth run about 2 years ago when I opened up the Louisiana market where I, for some reason, it's just like I get, in a smaller market, the ability to have a bigger range gets played upon. You know, the fact that I can be from Chicago, New York, or Boston, I can be hardcore Boston. The fact that I can do that in a marketplace a little bit smaller than Louisiana opens up here, without, as opposed to L.A., where I got a guy that just does that. But in a smaller market like Chicago, or even Louisiana, rather, is James could do – I could throw him in everything.
Yep.
He could be the cop, the doctor, the lawyer, you know, and all those things. So it gave
Treme me, was big for you,
Treme
right?
Treme was big. I did a lead in a movie – didn't really turn out too good. A movie called Enemies Among Us with Eric Roberts and Billy Zane.
Hey, you know what? Just hanging out with Eric Roberts.
Right.
The movie doesn't have to
that
be good.
Probably.
Right.
Taking him to the best place that Louisiana had, the Baton Rouge offer, and just
did he
to
put?
Horse.
Did he order it with mushrooms, or did he put some
mushrooms.
On?
No, he didn't order mushrooms. He had a prescription.
Sure, of course.
California. He's got a prescription.
They He's mean, like, oh, no, I got my own,
yeah.
Jim. Don't worry.
Yeah,
sprinkle.
But he was fantastic. What I like.
He's
about
awesome, though, right?
Yeah. Robert's story is there. People periodically kept coming up to him and saying, "Hey, Eric, do you remember something?" He goes, "Honey, I did a lot of drugs in the 80s.
Yeah. I love how he specified the 80s.
Goes, I did a lot of drugs over the time. He goes, if it was a great thing,
the 80s.
Keep that, hold that like tight, you know, remember it as well, because I don't. It was a terrible thing. I apologize. Still working on it. Goes, whatever memory you have, you know, may it be a good one, or if it's a bad one, may this one be better.
Yeah, right.
But I love,
that's
like,
so great.
Just like, because it cuts
he
off.
He broke
everybody.
It down.
He went right to the chase to say, "Hey, look, you know,
he's a problem solver.
There was a moment in time. There was a time warp happened for me, of which I can't really speak."
That's
to
the mark of a great actor, though. He found like five ways to play that scene.
He was
prepared for "You're the Father."
Yeah, right.
And he was like,
"Yeah, I'm sure." He's like, "Remember the time?" Yeah.
So you do this movie with Eric Roberts. Then you get Treme, I remember. And
then Treme would... You know,
come on, Melissa Leo. Is she amazing?
Melissa Leo is the joy of all joys.
She is amazing off-screen that she's on screen.
Absolutely.
You love her, right?
And also, you know what's funny is, I'm now, and my reps are now pattering me after a male version of Melissa Leo.
That's,
you can throw him
it's
in
a good
anything.
Move.
It's a good... You know, moving out of the character, you know, pool and rolling me into the supporting actor pool. This is an actor you can put with another Oscar-winning or Oscar-contending level actor that's going to hold his own, and the scene's not going to die out. And after doing four seasons working opposite Melissa, that's exactly the way it is.
Right. That's great.
I know that we work together. There's a big difference between her salary and mine, big difference between her career and mine. However, there is some similarities in the sense that the variety of things that can and do.
So
I'm getting the opportunities to kind of expand my range, first off.
Yeah.
And then being able to kind of get into kind of higher profile movies like The Butler, for example. Yeah. We can segue into that.
Right, right. You know, I did have one more question, though. Sure. What? And this is no insult to someone like Triple H, but you do two yeah. movies with Triple H. What yeah. is the difference between doing work with Melissa Leo in a scene and a Triple H?
You know, you're going to be surprised. Not much.
Really?
Well, only in the sense that Melissa is a master.
Yeah,
she's
right.
She's a master at knowing how to close up. She makes like quick little choices. Subtleties are there. But Paul, in terms of Paul
Levesque, right?
He is because he's not an actor. He spends a lot of time preparing and being ready for
really?
Everything that's going on.
So he was ready to go for
these
movies.
He's ready to go every single time. There's never an issue about lines. Never an issue about where the scene goes or what they're doing. You know, keep in mind that he also develops these scripts. So when he is getting the thing, each of these scenes has been worked out. He's been in discussion meetings with the writers. So there's not anything going on in the scene that he's not keenly aware of, as opposed to other actors who come in, and they're not as aware.
So let's segue into the Butler. Yeah. Butler's also Louisiana.
Yeah.
So how'd you get involved with this project and the 45 producers?
I was a second choice for the Paperboy.
You were okay, Lee really? Daniels.
The Paperboy.
Yeah. Okay.
And he remembered me, and then I walked in the room and.
Man, isn't it funny how that works?
Yeah, it was just like, you know, the cast director was his sister, and Leah Daniels Butler, and she had said, you know, James, you remember James? James was your second choice for such and such role.
Yeah.
Was to be Cusack's uncle, which I'm way too young, seeing that John and I are, 2 years apart?
Right.
But then again, you know, Jared Leto, it's like we're not that far apart either. So. But the reality is that I had such a memorable audition for Lee that he remembered me, and then I came in and just did the work I needed to do. And I play Chief of Staff, which is Sherman Adams.
Right.
He's a historical figure. He was kind of like a Cheney to Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Eisenhower was not a guy who made decisions without lots of thought. But you had to push him to do it. You had to push him to D-Day. You had to push him to do these things. So very much when it came to Sherman Adams was very much a guy who really pushed him to say, you know, we can't let the South tell us what to do over federal law. We have to go in there. We can't let them do this.
Now,
so,
you're in this movie with all these big stars.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was reading about Spielberg this week and the making of Hook and how he was basically saying this, you know, I haven't worked with big stars in 20 years up until this point, from like 73 to 93.
Right.
I mean, he didn't really consider the Roy Schreiders of the world big stars.
Right.
And in a way, he didn't really work with any big stars. And Dreyfuss was like one of his best friends, so he doesn't even consider that.
Right.
So he finally works with these big stars like Hoffman. There's so many stars in that movie. Julia Roberts, Robin Williams. Hard when you work with all these big stars. The Butler has every big star in Hollywood.
Oh my God. I was lucky to get the premiere.
Well, what are the difficulties of that?
You know, just you need to recognize your place, but you ought to realize that it's a painting, like all films are paintings. So every particular color, every little nuance you think about is important, even when others may see. I'm red. How can you not? You know, like, do you not know red? That's
yeah.
this whole painting is red. So the point is that you. You try to find and navigate your own way. You know, I've worked with a lot of, like, A-list actors, so
sure.
you get very good at not overstepping your bounds, not eavesdropping on conversations,
yeah.
not, you know, finding your way. Usually when it comes to the work, the good, the real great ones, they're just happy and appreciative that you really are there.
I find it interesting because you worked with Cusack again.
Yeah.
And Cusack has been doing some interesting.
I've never worked with John.
This is the first time,
yeah.
right? Right.
Well, I'm in the same movie with him, but I did Class like years ago in high school.
Oh, that
Other
did
than
you?
That, really? Only two times that John and I have ever been in the same film.
Wow. Okay. So John's doing all this interesting work right now. He's taking some character roles. He's doing some bad guys.
Yeah.
Do you think he's mellowed out?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Because I know
I know Lee really digs him, and he'll be in Lee's.
I've noticed that he's in every Lee movie
that's
right
the thing,
now.
You know, you find a director. You know,
You
know, may all be P.T. Anderson. You know, I mean, like that's the
true.
Guy I want to. He's on my he's on my list.
That's right. true. That's true. I'm just very curious about that because he's doing a lot with Lee Daniels, and curiosity was with obviously he has this reputation that he's very difficult and people don't really like dealing with him. But Lee keeps putting him in everything. So him and Lee must have a fantastic relationship.
I would assume so. And I thought he did pretty good work in the movie. I really liked
no,
him.
No, he did.
He's one of my favorite characters.
Listen, John is a great actor.
True.
Don't get me wrong about that.
Right.
I think John's a really good actor. He's kind of like America's Hugh Grant.
Right.
He's good at what he does.
Right, exactly.
Okay?
Right. But, you know, here's the thing. He could go the Vince Vaughn route. He could go the Owen Wilson route and just keep doing the same movie over and over again.
Yeah.
He doesn't. And that's a mark of, like, that's him.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
I'll give him due credit for that.
That's cool. So you go to this premiere.
Yeah.
Is this the first time you meet, like, half these people?
Yeah, a little bit. First time.
Did you see Oprah?
I met Oprah. I met
I saw a picture on the, you got a picture,
and
right?
I got a picture when she, in the LA premiere, we had a little more time, because my uncle actually knows her from Chicago. My
Uncle
Bruce knows her. And
she shows up in the photographs.
Yeah, it was kind of cool, man. Yeah, that's our Christmas picture. Okay. We're going to have the kids photobomb in the back.
Okay.
Because they just did not make the Christmas picture. It's when Oprah kind of over...
It's Jimmy and Oprah this year for the Christmas
Oprah
album.
Yeah, that was everything.
Awesome.
But yeah, it was an amazing experience. You know, Lee, I got to improv with Robin, which is a rare improv, not on comedy, but on a drama thing.
So Robin even improvs drama.
Yeah, because we did...
You think Robin just doesn't want to learn lines?
Well, I don't know.
I'm just...
What are you, TMZ?
I'm just saying...
I'm not baiting you to say... I will say
my
this,
first
though,
thought is... Well, that's
curious.
He came
from another movie, and he probably didn't have the time to do the research that the other actors in the scene did.
That answers that.
So we did a clip notes with him and filled him in historically where we're at, and Lee did too. But then we improv stuff, and half the stuff was scripted, and half the stuff was improv, and half stuff.
What makes it in the movie? Half and half?
Which is great. So, you know.
Any of your stuff that was improv stay in?
Yeah.
So you had to be really happy about that. You're like, I wrote this shit, homie.
There was other stuff that didn't stay in. There were other shots that didn't stay in. But the improv stuff did, when I was really happy with it.
I just imagine you at the premiere. Yeah, I just imagine you at the premiere elbow and someone being like, I wrote that.
I improvised that.
That's fine.
Well, Danny Strong and I become good friends. And so I was like, you know, that was my life.
It's a good friend to have.
That's
a good friend to have.
Right now, that boy is on fire.
Yeah, he's on fire.
I'm being on fire. He is catching. He's doing the new the Twilight. You know, like the guy's amazing.
Hunger Games, right?
But he's brilliant.
Same difference.
Yeah. He's in the movie actually.
Is he?
He's in the bus scene when they're in the when the bus gets blown.
Yeah.
The guy trying to pick up a girl, like, oh, so you don't have a boyfriend?
Wait, who's this?
That's Danny Strong.
He's the writer.
Robin Williams.
I love this guy. Love him.
So, what happens as an actor when you see all the drama before this movie with having to change the title from the Butler to Lee Daniels the Butler? Were you kind of freaking out?
Well, it was. Harvey Weinstein said it best at the premiere of the New York, and he said, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Warner Brothers for the tens of millions of dollars of free press."
Yeah.
He goes, "So now I'd like to show you the movie, the short film, The Butler, from Warner Brothers. Before we start, the Lee Daniels, The Butler, I'd like to show you the short." Oh, wait, they can't find it. So the irony of all that is they can't even find it in their archives. But it was the best kind of publicity in that regard, which is going to segue
in the wound, Harvey.
Yeah.
So you got to hang out a bit with Harvey. I got to meet Harvey this
He's
year.
A nice guy.
You know what?
And he actually remembers.
I got to tell you something.
Good photographic memory.
He was,
for all the stories about what an asshole he is, he was the nicest guy on the planet.
He was very nice to Matt.
But Cusack's always been nice to me too.
Their meeting was cut a little short, but he was. You were so weirded out by that.
I was really weirded out because he talked to me. I didn't talk to him.
You're just like, what just
happened?
Like,
we were just standing at a bar. It was me and Tarantino.
Wow.
And he just looks at me and he says hello. And, like, I'm like, is Harvey Weinstein saying hello to me?
Yeah,
oh, he's about to kick me in the fucking balls. Yeah, right.
He said something.
I go, he's about to kick me in the balls
He
or
said
something.
Something on just totally a non-sequitur. Like, my, what a lovely lace doily.
Yeah,
or
right.
Something like that.
Right.
Something really weird.
No, but he was a really good dude.
Yeah.
And I'm
that's been my experience, too. I actually played Harvey Weinstein-esque character in a movie that hasn't come out yet called Shreveport, Ryan Phillippe's directorial debut.
Okay.
So it's like a combination of, and I can't wait to see the
Yeah, Ryan's really branching out, man.
Ryan's doing great. He's a really good actor, really good director as well.
I thought he was surprisingly the best.
Sundance movie that
was that his dad was his debut directing?
Yeah, it hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
I thought he was surprisingly, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, but I thought he was surprisingly the best part of the Damages season 5.
I agree.
I actually. He played a Julian Assange role better than Cumberbatch did in this movie.
You're right.
He was very good in it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that season wasn't...
I'm not enthralled with the final season of Damages either.
Yeah.
No. So, you do the Butler.
Yeah.
All right. Butler comes out. Okay, but during that time, you're filming another movie.
That's right.
Dallas Buyers
Club. Well, here's what's interesting.
Yeah.
The movie I just talked about, Shreveport, Ryan Phillippe's directorial debut, I put that on tape, and I just slammed that audition. It was so damn good.
Yeah? What are you playing that?
I play a prototype, typical Hollywood producer, much like Harvey Weinstein.
Right. So it's just pretty much hard. Okay.
Did you come into the audition with like a cigar and just be like?
No, I was things talking about having anal sex with hookers from Thailand.
Okay, cover your ears back there, honey.
Yeah, sweetie.
Yeah, that's how they talk.
So strongly that I got an offer within 2 days of submitting the thing, and the producer of that was also the producer of Dallas Buyers Club. She then loved the audition so much, she showed it to all the producers of Dallas Buyers Club, because when she was done with Shreveport, this is Holly Wisma, who is Cash and Elway's ex-wife.
Okay.
Amazing
who
producer.
Did
amazing
the guy. Butler,
yeah,
Cash and Elway.
Cash is the butler.
He's an actor
so
too,
this,
right?
Yeah. So there was this little like circle going on where my audition was circulating around the
That's how it happens.
People. I heard about a particular role of Jared's father in the movie. And so then I knew that was the next movie up, and I had my agent jump on. I said, make sure you get me a thing, and I did. And so I went in and
How'd you know that the role was?
I knew that the my manager had tracked the script.
Okay.
And that I kind of read through it, and I heard that they were, that as she was finishing up Shreveport, she was prepping that next movie. So I knew it was.
Yeah.
And it was just.
And you knew you wanted to get involved in that.
I knew there was one in New Orleans, it was an hour away.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to keep that role going, which is pretty much how this kind of, these things kind of go about.
Man, but I think people don't understand the hustle. Because, like, Jimmy's hunting down scripts.
Okay. Yeah. If you're not down for the hustle.
Yeah.
Do not do this. If you can't wake up every single morning, you have to do this.
Yeah.
Don't do this. Because the truth is, it's a hustle at every single
time. Do your agents and managers get annoyed with you that you call them every day and go, I want to get in on this?
I get information about certain projects. I track projects.
Yeah.
I track down scripts.
You're like the stock market.
Yeah. I send out postcards when I do a gig. I mean, like, I don't mess around.
So this is very interesting because I think some of our listeners can have a good insight in here. You get up and you just, like, read things or you're monitoring these projects or the shoots, or you know people. You have people call you on the inside.
You can even do it through internet, through IMDb.
Uh-huh.
You can look at projects and put in location. I can see what projects coming in Louisiana.
Yeah, sure.
I have friends who are part of the film commission, so they get, once a film is greenlit, they get their paperwork for the state. That means all the SUT people, all all the medical services, everything's going to need to go fall into place. So projects like that I do. I try to track projects here in Los Angeles. I try to connect the dots between things that I see. Sometimes people have access to the breakdowns of information about projects that are coming about. If I see a director or writer or somebody, I'll email my manager and say, hey, I work with such and such person. You know, so because it is – I'll tell you the quick hustler story is I was doing ADR work for Click, Adam Sandler's movie.
Okay, yeah.
A friend of mine was doing posts for it.
What were you doing ADR?
They just wanted people to, like, these guys to tell jokes.
Okay.
In the background thing. So Adam, like, just did a whole slew of jokes. So we had he brought in three or four guys, and we made tons of money just telling jokes. So at the end,
great job.
ADR is working. Winkler's there, and he's doing ADR, kind of fixing up things for Click. And so I go to, like, shake his hand, and when I shake his hand, he's got a card in his hand. Now, at that time, Henry Winkler was doing a CBS series with my friend Stockard Channing.
Sure.
Called Out of Practice, I think, on CBS.
So he was handing out of practice cards?
He literally does like he's a salesman, like he's like it's a realtor. And he shakes my hand, and in my hand is a card, and it says Out of Practice Tuesdays on CBS.
Smooth.
And on the back it says, Best Wishes, Henry Winkler. Okay, that's when it dawned on me.
Oh, what a hustler.
I just got solicited by the...
Right.
And then I realized, wait a minute.
When you were going to go talk to him.
Right. I'm going, wait, if the Fonz is hustling, if it's a hustle at every level.
Right.
Because he's trying to, like, undo the Fonz image. Or if somebody's a film actor and they're trying to do TV, or TV actor trying to do film.
Man, how old does he have to be for people to not think of him as the Fonz?
I don't think he's ever wearing that one off.
Jeez.
I don't get it.
Because it was such an iconic.
So much other stuff, though.
He might as well be Elvis.
Adam
Sandler, I mean, like,
kiss his feet for that.
Oh, sure.
That movie, which is fantastic.
Sure.
But Henry's an amazing person. But that's a perfect example of that. At every single level, someone's hustling. So it made me realize, wow, this guy's hustling. What's my goal? You know, I want to get somewhere. So at every step of the way, I try to leave no stone unturned. I try not to go too far and push my way
so
in.
So when you get a role, yeah, you say you give out postcards. What does that mean?
I send a postcard out to casting or producer people saying I booked this role.
Yeah.
I'll send another postcard when it's being, you know, when I finish filming. I'll send another postcard when it comes out.
Do you send the film to people at all?
No,
or?
I can't really do that because it'll be mostly it's TV or film stuff.
Okay.
But, I mean, I literally just send out a postcard for
And does it work
Dallas
for
Stars.
You? Do people
yeah,
watch
really
it and stuff? You
don't
really
know? Care that does,
but you don't care.
That's exactly right. Because I'm a farmer.
That's crazy. I love it.
How they grow, what they do, if they see it, I can't control that. But I can put out the effort.
But you
I
never
can,
know. Someone may be like, hey, Jimmy's on Criminal Minds tonight.
But you have a very clear and precisely coordinated system that you systematically
right.
adhere to. So which
yeah.
is pretty, like, yeah, that's
and
why
I'm
you're
a,
getting...
I'm a typical actor of superstitious, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm afraid if I don't do that, there may be that one person
right.
who didn't know that I'm in Dallas Buyers Club and their assistant,
absolutely.
You know, will go yeah. see the movie and go... Oh my God, James was amazing as Jared's yeah. father, which we should talk about.
Well, early,
yeah, no, that's why I'm going to ask you.
Earlier,
well, what I want to ask you about is how is it working with the reclusive and I mean, he's like an icon to gay men and women, Jared Leto. I
yeah.
mean, what is that like? Because he's pretty reclusive. Like, he's not a very – he doesn't go do talk shows
right.
and, like
right.
– I'm shocked he was even at this premiere. He usually doesn't
right.
even go out and do that stuff.
But
so
he's
what's
never
the deal?
Seen the film.
He's still never
he's
seen the film.
We'll
okay.
go back to at the end.
Okay, but tell me what it's like working
here's
with
him. What it was. I worked with this guy, Tim Phillips, who really got me honed in on what.
That was your acting coach.
Yeah. yeah. So the relationship between Jared's.
You worked with Tim for this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Character of Rayon and Rayon's father is an estranged relationship.
Sure.
Of which.
Because explain, Rayon plays a transgender.
He's transgender, okay.
okay.
And I'm a Southern banker. So yeah. let your mind go down the road of
yeah, you know
of
what?
What do you what? How lovely is am I proud of my boy? You
sure.
know, look what I did to my boy.
Sure.
So you know, he comes to me asking for money for the Dallas Buyers to keep the Dallas Buyers Club going.
Yeah.
I'd never met Jared before. I was familiar with my so-called life. Claire Danes has done pretty
sure.
well a lot of that. Jared's had a pretty good career. 30
They're
Seconds
two
to Mars,
great
an
actors.
Amazing band, by
yep.
the way, and I've watched
You're right.
To the Bowl. The reality is that I don't know this person. I'm estranged from him. So for the first time ever, I mean, I've done now 110 film and TV shows. I usually introduce myself usually in the makeup trailer or when I get on
mm-hmm.
set. This time around, I'm two makeup mirrors away from him, and he's makeup because he comes out of drag and he gets
yeah.
his hair done. I said nothing to this man. I never introduced myself to him.
Were you told to say nothing,
no,
or you just
made,
got
I made
a
choice
thing?
To not, given the nature of the scene
yeah.
and the relationship, and it's a powder keg moment, I decided I was not going to talk to him at all.
It's best that you guys don't have a previous relationship
right.
going into this, so you could treat him, I don't want to say like shit, but you can treat him,
I don't know him.
The way you're going to treat him
right.
and not feel anything about it. You're going to have no
exactly.
secondary
exactly
subconscious
right. and
thoughts.
That lend into the kind of environment that Jean-Marc, who's an amazing director, and you'll know more about him from Dallas Buyers.
Sure.
He's doing the movie Wild what's the name? I can't think of it off the top of my head. But the reality is that he set up an environment where their jazz music was playing.
Yeah.
He had speakers up, jazz music playing, relaxed. There are no lighting set in this thing. It's all shot natural lighting.
Uh-huh.
I never said anything
the,
to Jared.
The scene or the movie shot
the
in natural
scene,
lighting?
Totally shot, no lighting set up.
Wow.
All natural lighting.
Wow.
Okay. So...
Oh.
Here we are.
Ballsy
in my,
choice.
Here we are in my,
oh, my
office, which is natural lighting off of a bank in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Old bank. And he asked Jared to explore my office, which had photographs of actually my wife and my daughter, but not him. So the idea is that there's a new family that has moved. I'm on to another family. I don't even know him. I have no relationship to him.
Yeah, right.
He's looking at photographs of strangers, but of me. And you know, so we start. He said to Jared to explore the space. They gave me some glasses. I cleaned my glasses. There was no. He said he talked to the camera guys a little bit. He goes, you know, we're just going to shoot this rehearsal. I'm not going to say action. I'm just going to you guys just do what you need to do, and then we'll just start going. And so he started exploring the space. I started watching him and how uncomfortable I feel about him being in my office, touching my things, looking at photographs of my family that he's not a part of. And then at a certain point, the music faded down. He tapped the camera on the shoulder, and we just started the scene, and
wow.
we shot the rehearsal.
Oh,
wow!
And
wow!
Then after the first scene, Jared was like really kind of freaked out, and I was kind of freaked out. And so he said, "Let's just do it again." And he whispered something in Jared's ear, which was something in my ear, and we did it 15 different times, different ways.
Oh, you did a lot of takes,
huh? You know, I was staunch and gave him nothing. I gave in. Like, it was a million. We did it a million different ways to Sundance.
So when you were doing this film, they wanted a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case. They didn't know.
And they had them.
Yeah.
You know, and I have friends in the film, and there's a moment where he's asking for money, and he's because he's dying of AIDS.
Yeah.
And I have a life insurance policy on him, so
yeah.
Here's a powder keg moment. The guy, you know, Jean-Marc said a lot of people who had AIDS at that time sold their life insurance policies for pennies on the dollar.
Sure.
Just to pay the rent, just to keep their job, just to pay for their
meds. They were
going
to die anyways.
They're going to die anyways. What's the point?
Right. Yeah.
So they sold it off for far little. But here's a moment where I have a life insurance policy that I paid the premium on,
mm-hmm.
and he's telling me he has AIDS. I can actually profit, and
yeah,
I don't
right.
agree with him or his lifestyle. I can actually profit from his demise.
Oh, wow.
So it's a powerful, powerful
Now,
theme.
Was this true, this character and this moment? Because I know the story's true. This.
I don't know if this story is
okay.
true so much as that I do know that people did sell their insurance.
Sure. Oh, no, that's
very,
true.
Very
sure.
And that they had to go back to their parents, who didn't necessarily really agree with them or their lifestyle.
So what's
choices.
The difference between 3 takes and 15 takes as an actor? Pros and cons.
My audition or callback for Jean-Marc, I did it 15 different ways as well.
Okay.
So he wanted to have various different options and ideas to do things. And he was such a perfectionist, like a little bit of the slow this down. And then when you get to
do you feel you give your best work earlier, though, than later? Or?
You know, I don't know. I don't know.
It's always my best work, Matthew.
Yeah, right, right.
But I'm later. But I'm ready for all of it.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, I've learned from Tim. I've come to play.
That's great.
You know,
right.
You do all your homework, and you like 80% of the time, what I do in my audition is pretty much what I do on the jobs.
Well, we're gonna bring your daughter on in a couple cool. minutes, and Claire's gonna come on in about a couple minutes here, and we're gonna talk Bonnie and Clyde. But I was gonna ask you any other stories about Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, just the The bigger one is Jared's never seen this film.
Yeah, right. I saw him at the premiere. Like, he doesn't stick around?
Scene, this is the scene they're going to use submitting for the Oscars for him.
Yeah.
And that scene between he and I, it is Oscar-worthy of
right.
at least a nomination, if not a win, in my view.
Yeah.
Third award, a given.
Yeah.
A lot of Fassbender for 12 Years a Slave. That's,
sure.
There's a lot of competition in that marketplace. And you think about Bruce Dern for Nebraska. There's some heavy hitters even in the supporting category.
Yeah.
However, the work that he does in this scene and the level and the nuances of and the nature of which we created it, the nature of way that we're total strangers and that he's begging for his life and there's a moment where he like turns into a little boy and it sounds just like a little boy asking for love from his father.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. And everybody tells him this scene is like the most amazing and powerful scene and the guy's never seen it. Yet he's extended invitations to the Hollywood Bowl to see 30 Seconds from Mars. He's sending invitations for me to an after party at the Chateau Marmont.
Hey,
he's get photographs with always taking pictures with me on the carpet.
So I why mean, won't he see somebody, the movie? Have you asked him?
I think he doesn't want to let this character go. He really did dive in deep.
Yeah.
He lost a lot of weight. It changed his physical mental state of mind. I think he doesn't want to watch it where therefore it's something outside of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful, wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And I've built a nice relationship with this man, but what's great is that his generosity is based on never even seeing the work that we did.
That's great.
He experienced it. We experienced it. And what's beautiful is that's ours. That's ours that just happened to be documented.
You spent an unforgettable day with Jared Leto.
Absolutely.
That's who I was. Because this movie was only shot in like 18, 20 days, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... There's
That's
another,
great.
An amazing kind of person too. And
one
also,
magical afternoon.
You know,
yeah,
we have a he thing that I'm actually a guy that shows up and does stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Say, I'm gonna go 30 seconds. I go to 30 show. I show up. I'm there.
Sure, you're a supporter.
His fans have been amazing to be on Twitter.
Yeah,
I mean they've been so the echelon's like an amazing group
supportive.
Of people.
Supportive.
So
that's great.
It's funny how here's somebody who's extended so much and he hasn't even get to see the byproduct of what we kind of created. But even more so. That's how powerful it was in the moment that we did it.
Right.
That's great.
Well, it's very, very humbling and endearing to know that you have that work ethic and that some actors do have that work ethic as actors sometimes have this reputation for being diva-esque and temperamental.
There's no room for that.
There's
really
no room.
Great
no.
ones that I've worked with, even Tom Cruise, hardworking folks,
right.
There's none of that. There's Good. None of that pretense. At least that's not been my experience, So you don't get it from Melissa. I tell you, she comes to work. She comes to play. I come to play. Nice. So I think that, you know, that work ethic is important. Yeah. And also, what's funny is I feel like I am better at what I'm doing, but I'm still kind of doing the same true and honest work, moment to moment work.
Right. Yeah.
It's just it's in projects that are more and more people are able to see it. You know what I mean? It's connecting the dots.
No, I hear you.
Which
yeah.
is a joy for me because I always say, God, you know, I've done 100 things, no one recognizes me in anything. But then like, goal to be truthful and honest in each of the things I did.
Right.
So the hope was somebody will figure it out rather than all my other character guys like the Giamattis and the Philip Seymour Hoffmans yeah. and the, you know, John C. Reilly's, you know, they have that one breakout role that just pulls them out of the pack.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting
it's
for
gonna
it.
It's going
to
happen.
But these kind of projects help me to get to that next level. There's
yeah.
ways about
and in the meantime, you're making a living as an actor, though. I mean,
oh,
hey,
dude, that's
beautiful.
The joy of joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that the yeah. best that you don't
Although
have to work
the
like two jobs?
Of Dallas Buyers Club, my wife, you know, really laid it down. So you got to take out the garbage. I still reeled out of here
That's
with the trucks and pictures with Oprah and everything. Right.
Do you ever look at her and go, "I'm Sherman Adams"?
Yeah, don't you know who I am? Well, Sherman Adams needs to take out the trash.
Yeah, right.
You know, roll out the door, get them on the corner, separate them enough so the guy can. So that's the other thing is those humbling little moments where you're like, you're still
right.
You're you know. So the fact that somebody has somebody else to take out their trash, perhaps to evaluate that,
yeah.
so maybe that feeds into that.
As a working actor, yeah. what's more important to you, the job and the money or the art?
The job and the money or the?
Art. Let's say you get this indie script ever, but they're like, James,
the money,
we're
hello.
Literally going to pay you nothing, but you only need to be here for 3 days.
We go back then. I'm happy to have a team.
Yeah.
And we vacillate between that all the time.
You do.
Which is,
okay.
Here's a job, here's a role that I think could do some
it's
stuff.
Amazing, it's amazing, and it's big, and it's important,
well,
but they're not
going
to pay
you
a dime.
Right. But the fact to play that kind of guy, that kind of, you know, asshole producer that,
sure.
you know, that's...
Great opportunity.
It's
great
fun.
Opportunity. How many days did you work on it?
Three.
Okay, so three. This is an example.
Yeah.
3 days on Shreveport, you're not going to make a cent, James,
yeah.
but... Great role.
Absolutely.
Do you want to do it?
Right.
How do you come to that decision? Because the script's amazing.
It's right in front of me, so that's the other bigger thing. Is
yeah.
that, you know, I always go, I mean, I'm either auditioning for a job, doing a job.
That's
or,
true, too.
You know,
are you available?
That's pretty much how it goes now. So, you know, sometimes they fall right in your lap, you know,
that's
and
great.
this one kind of did. And also, I had so much fun doing it.
I know.
That it was like, and that's the thing. I just, even though I'm auditioning now, I'm still having a fun time. I can't wait to shut up 45 minutes early for an audition.
Yeah.
Because the role was so interesting and provocative that I was like, you know what, I'm going in, I'm going to put my stamp on this. Good luck, That's everybody, awesome. Because I got this one.
Well, let's bring on Sinclair and talk Bonnie and Clyde. Sinclair Dumont, you bring your daughter in the business.
That's right.
By the way, she's already, from talking to her, smarter than me.
me too.
While she settles in, I wanted to say, yeah, when I was putting my film together, I'm like, man, only I am so dumb. To put a film together that involves all 20-somethings when I have great friends like Jimmy Dumont and Brett Cullen and you know, the Matthew Modines of the world and all these people where I'm like, I could have probably gotten them to do these great roles for Peanuts. But
yeah.
I'm so dumb, I don't write movies for anyone over the age of 22.
Well, you got to make that first one.
That's right.
That shows you
That's
the,
right.
your style and the thing that you like.
You're going
to
love this
you
movie.
Go,
You're
going
to love it.
And you go, hey, you know what? I wrote something for you in mind. Yeah, everybody the first one, you know.
I'm going to send this to you first.
Cool.
Out of everybody.
Cool.
You are like my most important opinion. Bonnie and Clyde, when's
yes.
it come out? Thanksgiving weekend
no,
or something?
We're, no, we're
or?
Doing, go ahead.
December 8th and 9th.
Sinclair knows.
I know. Sinclair knows.
She knows everything. Like, she was saying, yeah, we're talking about a movie earlier. She's like, I read the script. It was really good. Like, she's read 100 of them, and she's like, no, I've read some bad ones, too.
She's an old soul. Go ahead.
How old are you, Sinclair?
12.
Here, hold the mic a little closer. Yeah. There
12.
You go. There you go. There All right, you're 12. Wow. Wow, you are getting up there. Are you old?
No.
All right.
It's kind of like the way that you feel like when you like turn like an age, like when you're 11 and you turn 12, like the morning, like, man, I don't feel 12 at all. And you don't feel it until you get halfway through, and then you're like, okay, I'm 12.
Have you always wanted to act, sweetheart?
Yeah.
All right, so you watch Daddy and you're like, I want to do what he does, or do you watch Daddy and you go, I'm better than him?
He's baiting you.
She's like, which question? What do I say?
She's like, can I walk home from here, or do I get back in the car?
But tell me why you always wanted to act.
I just really thought it was very interesting being somebody you're not, even if it's just for like 5 minutes, you know, like.
Shreya talks like Meryl Streep.
I know. what's her name? We're just gonna, you know, I already want to be that person.
Yeah, right.
My past life.
Yeah, right.
Was Shirley MacLaine. My past life.
Shirley MacLaine, right?
I was that person.
You haven't even seen Bonnie and Clyde, the original, right?
Well,
with Warren Beatty.
No,
you don't even know who Warren Beatty is, do you? Do you know Warren Beatty?
Some kind of actress of some type or sort.
She's a really good actress, Warren Beatty. She's one of my favorite actresses.
don't tell him. So the way it came about is that, you know, again, Louisiana, they were doing a miniseries there, and my agent had called, said there's this role of Nell, which is Clyde's little sister, and she had met Sinclair at Christmas time and knew Sinclair wanted to be an actress and said, you know, this is a role that's like perfect for Sinclair.
Yeah.
Would she put it on tape? So Sinclair went ahead and, what are you laughing at?
She's so bored doing interviews already. She's a Family Guy.
No, she's a Family Guy. Like,
but this is one of my favorite shows. It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, her second favorite show is the Matthew Aaron Show. Right. But Family Guy.
Family Guy's the first.
Damn it.
Next to that.
I'm paying you. Turn off the Family Guy.
That's right. So go ahead.
All right. So tell me about Bonnie and Clyde. So you auditioned for this?
Yeah. I just kind of, you know, I read it through. I was like, cool character. Yeah, buddy. then we put me on tape, and we kind of sent it to, we did send it to the casting director. She cast me.
That was it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was very funny.
You told me a very, very funny story about this.
Like
this is good.
Yeah.
This is good.
So the reality is, so
are you already in the film at this point in time?
No, no, I'm not.
You're not.
What happens is, she ends up getting the job first. So, like, because they wanted the younger, they get the young Nell taken care of. So, she auditions for Nell, and, like, literally within 48 hours, my agent's like, she's like, oh, my God, the cast director, like, really loves her. It's like, she's sending it off to network. Like, you know, she hasn't started the director yet, but she wants to get network approval first. So she sends it off to network, which is Lifetime at the time. Because now it's going to be on all three networks.
Lifetime, A&E, and History.
Lifetime, A&E, and History.
On December 8th and 9th.
It's weird, because usually, like, A&E and History, the collaborations, like they did with the other miniseries, like the Vikings miniseries, and then they had that one
about... Bible.
You are so much smarter than me. It's making me really depressed.
And, it's just like, ooh, Big Bang Theory. Sorry.
And the whole Dumont family has ADD.
Yeah, it's all good.
Ooh, Big Bang Theory.
That was pineapple.
Oh, pineapple. That's
pineapple. Pineapple.
So this is on all three networks.
Yep.
You were telling last night
the
story. This cracked me up.
So the thing is, so she gets cast.
Yeah.
I mean, like and then Bruce Beresford, Oscar-nominated director for Breaker Moran. I mean, amazing director.
Yeah.
Then I'm in Louisiana, and I'm the casting director Tracy Kilpatrick wants to bring me in for various different roles. There's a couple of sheriffs and this other thing. So I come in for a sheriff, and I walk in the room. The only thing that the director wants to talk about is Sinclair. He goes, oh, I love Sinclair. She's so wonderful, like an old soul. And I go, yeah, okay, about the scene. Yeah. No, but when Sinclair, like, she's just physically, am I right? Like, I'm getting Bruce down pretty good. She's physically just perfect. You know, like, if I look, like, when I have and I go, yeah. So the scene, and Tracy's trying to get me. So yeah, James and I. He goes, oh, yeah. Yeah, you work a lot. Yeah, that's nice. So what, Claire, like, there's something about, like, it's like, it was like Sinclair. So the reality is, so
you're like proud father,
like father
at the
like,
same
I'm,
time you're like
hey, going,
listen,
hey, dude,
butthead.
I need a job, too. You're like, you know, hello, I'm here too. She's my kid, so you got.
So are you thinking at this part you're not going to get the role?
Actually, there's a part of me that's thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to be in this movie.
Yeah, Sinclair's in and I'm out.
Sinclair's in and I'm out. I'm like, wait, this is not how I planned this. I end up reading the sheriff role, and he's like, oh, that's good. So let's do the thing and things like that, you know. And so finally, I read the sheriff role. I took the note that he did. He was great. You took that note. It's fantastic, wonderful. You know, and so and he goes, you know, I don't know if this is the one. You know, this role is the one. He goes, but we're gonna try it. And Tracy's like, yeah, we'll try to find something. I'm like, this is, you know, we'll give you a little sloppy.
Yeah.
Hey, a little something for the everyday. You know, we'll be.
Do we got some one or two lines for Jimmy? For Johnny Dumont. Johnny Dumont here.
Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's James who?
Yeah.
Sinclair's dad.
Miss Dumont's father.
Yeah, exactly. And then the deal is, then we get on set, and it was like, it was the same thing. Like, I've been on set with her. You can talk a little bit on set. Just talk about your on set.
Yeah,
set.
What did you do?
I mean,
she learned about her chair, how important her chair is.
Oh, did you get a chair? Did you get one of those nice chairs to sit in? Did it have your name on it?
I made a mistake sitting in her chair.
Really?
It was so like, it's so different than what I'm used to at school because, you know, kind of, there's this, like, it's school, like, it's just.
You have a cool chair at school to sit in?
I mean, I sit with my friends.
Or a full-time teacher on duty, or your dad as an assistant walking around with water bottles. Like, what do you need, Ms. Dumont? But I did teach her a cool lesson, which was, I say, you know, I've learned set etiquette from 100 plus sets. So I said, here's the thing you need to know is try to get people's names. It's really nice when you get people's names. Man, I gave her that one little note, and she ran. She goes, hey, Bill, when I'm done with Steve, I'll see what the lighting is with Joe, who's going to, like, focus and stuff, and then I'll be in my trailer working with Miss Lori, and then when I come back, I'll probably get some over crafty with Steve. You know? Like, she had everybody's
names.
She had
it down.
Yeah. Yeah, she took that note really well.
Sinclair, you're taking that money and saving it for college, right?
Yeah.
You are going to go to college,
every
right?
Of course, Dad. All right. Doesn't let me, you know.
I don't want to spend a dime.
Good. You're going to college. Oh.
There you go.
Then. All right. Joe Montaigne. Joe, Arlene, pay the light bill.
Light bill.
Electricity, please.
I got a deposit. We'll put a deposit down.
It's actually kind of a cool effect.
I mean, as much as I like.
Yeah, right. The lights are flickering in here.
Right.
We're kind
of
clubbing it up.
80s.
Yeah,
it's the real taste of Chicago on Navy Pier.
It's like there
is it blinding you?
I don't like good. It. Strobing. I don't like.
There you go.
That's good. Daddy doesn't
so
want
her,
you
tell,
to like that
about,
effect.
Tell him about your character a little bit.
Daddy does not want you going to the clubs.
That's
He's
right.
happy you do not
That's
like
right.
this.
But yeah, like one of the things was like, it's just really good to get to know people on set.
Emile Hirsch.
Did you? With Emile, I haven't even
met
Emile. You're hanging out with Emile. Right. Wait, but he's one of my favorites. Are you hanging out with Emile Hirsch and not me?
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, he's really, like, he's really nice. And, you know, I first met him when we were doing this one scene. It wasn't, like, the scene that, like, we were in, just him and me. It was in this one scene where, you know, the barn scene.
With Holiday Granger.
Sure.
Hunter.
Oh, Holly Hunter, that no name.
New best friend.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, Dale Dickey and Holly Hunter are like...
Let me tell you something. That is the best idol, best mentor you can ever have is Holly Hunter. She's the greatest.
Yeah, she didn't know who Holly Hunter was. And I was
you
like,
will
and
soon.
Holly Hunter was like at a certain point just like asked her question box and Sinclair like went on and on and on. And then she like turned over to me and like whispered, she's like, I love her. And I'm like, me too. So I was like, sweetheart, an Oscar-winning actress. That's not a bad thing.
We just watched
the cafeteria at your school.
We
right
just watched Living Out Loud again the other day, and
amazing.
She is one of my favorite actresses ever. I love her. That's so awesome. You get to work with Holly Hunter, and Emile was a sweetheart too. That's great
Holiday.
To hear.
Holiday,
so nice, and Holiday was just great.
Oh,
I love her. She's so nice.
She's so British.
Now I hope you talk just as well about the lighting guys as you do the gaffers. Listen, this is a little tip I'm sure your dad's given you, but if you're nice to everybody,
it
pays off.
No, it does.
It
because
pays
now,
off.
You know, like I work on all these sets in Louisiana. It's like
and you know everyone's name. And you know,
names. It's so much easier. Although one time, this guy recently did an episode of Ravenswood, which will be coming up in a couple of weeks,
about a month
or so. And I did. I overheard the medic actually saying, "Yeah, that's James Dumont. He's Michael Chiklis' stand-in." And I was
you
like,
"You just did a movie with Chiklis."
Yeah, we did the game where the game stands tall. It's going to be a great movie. Jim Caviezel.
That's so funny. Chiklis is standing.
Yeah.
You got more
and
hair than Chiklis.
Chiklis and I went to college together, so I texted him that thing, and he loved him hard.
That's so great. He's an awesome guy.
He's a super guy.
He's a really nice dude.
I love him. I'm hoping at some point. He said we're getting closer because we're
to,
the same
to
movie
do
together,
something right.
Do something together.
Together in
Absolutely.
A scene.
Almost Vegas came close a couple of times.
So let me ask you this, because before I get you guys out of here, I meant to ask you about American Horror Story. Because I don't watch it, but it's like everyone's favorite show on the planet. Yeah. So I'm the only one that doesn't watch it.
Sinclair didn't watch it. It's a little too creepy.
How did you get involved with American Horror Story?
My cousin couldn't even get through the first episode. My cousin Mia, she's just like...
That's scary?
Yeah, I can't
scary.
Do it.
I can't do it then either.
It's a little, Asylum, a little bit much.
So
this
is
year,
this one...
This year's a little more creepy and more witchy, which is fun.
Yeah.
Asylum, with, you know, talking about, you know...
Do you like this one, though?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I do
you
and,
like?
And,
do you
well,
like
also,
working for
like
in
Harry's Law with you know with
David
Kathy Bates.
E. Kelly and Kathy? And, oh,
Kathy Bates is amazing.
Do you have scenes with Kathy on American Horror Story?
No, this year I just was just Sarah Paulson.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
Sarah Paulson.
She's great.
I was her obstetrician. Okay. So
has this already aired? Pardon me for being so ignorant.
Spoiler,
I have
already,
no.
It's already aired.
Okay, it's already aired. Okay.
All my episodes thus far have aired.
Oh, so you may be back.
Maybe back.
We don't know.
Well, they do an ensemble thing there. My friend Dennis O'Hara is on there.
Yeah, Dennis, yeah.
So he's also Dallas Club. So there's they do recurring and people back. So it's open-ended at this point.
Could be another season. You never know.
Could be another season to bring me back as something else.
How amazing is Jessica Lange, though?
Jessica
I don't watch the show,
she
but she's
amazing
all
she's
the time.
She's amazing in the series. I saw her at the Fox party after
she's
the
still
Emmys.
Gorgeous.
Still sunny
drop
and gorgeous.
Dead, huh?
Yeah. I had a cool story about her when I was in New York. I lived, Frances Conroy, who's also in American Horror Story.
Okay.
I split her apartment in New York, in the Washington Heights, town. Below us was Mary Louise Parker. Up above us was Sam Shepard, and Jessica Lange had an
apartment.
So I first moved to New York, and I'm coming up the stairway, and down the staircase comes Sam Shepard and Jessica Lange, and I'm like, ooh!
That's so
awesome.
They were
visiting Randall Mell and Mary McLean.
That's so
who
awesome.
Was in the building. And
that's
I was
a
like,
crazy building.
It's a crazy building, but I was like, wait a minute. You know,
most
like,
talented building
yeah,
in
like
town.
I'm like, in New York City, like, this is why I came here. Like, I can't believe it's Jessica Lange from King Kong at that point. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic.
So pretty amazing.
One more plug for you.
Yeah.
So December 8th and 9th, Bonnie and Clyde.
8th
right,
and 9th,
Sinclair?
Bonnie and Clyde on...
How about Treme?
Treme comes on December 1st.
And that's and the final season.
Final season. I'm doing 3 out of 5. I'm on the first episode on December 1st and December 8th, which is when Bonnie
great.
And Clyde is.
Great. So a lot of Jimmy Dumont on December 8th.
All over, man.
You
and
can't
then,
miss them.
Dallas Buyers Club is open now in L.A. and New York.
And it'll be
open
going wide.
On, the 22nd.
Okay.
And Nashville, a week from today, on November 13th.
Who do you have scenes with on that?
With Hayden Panett. I'm a sleazy.
Really? She's
can't
gorgeous.
Keep his hands to himself.
She's gorgeous, though.
She's gorgeous, and she's a really good actress.
Is she a good girl, too?
She's solid. I love her. Love
she was
her,
really
love
great,
her.
Too.
Yeah, Hayden Panett.
Jimmy loves Hayden. Everybody.
What's not to love?
We'll talk privately later.
Sinclair,
thank you so
hey,
much
out.
For doing this.
Out. We're going to
hey,
close out.
Sinclair, you know I'm going to be coming to you to do interviews more than your dad in the future.
No problem.
You're going to be like A-list, and I'm going to be like, I guess like, you could bring... Whatever his name
yeah,
is.
Bring your assistant.
Yeah, your
Dad.
Assistant. Your assistant. And but I'm really proud of you, sweetheart.
Cool.
And it's really, really nice to meet you.
Great.
And you should watch Family Guy. Great. Great. Can I leave now?
Yeah,
Bonnie
cool.
and Clyde, December 8th and 9th. What networks? Impress everyone to show how smart this girl is. Go ahead.
A&E History and Lifetime. So
there it is.
I know. Blows my mind how much
from
she knows. From
the mouths of babes.
I guess maybe I was smart when I was 12, but I don't remember being smart.
I was dropped a few times.
Yeah, right? I feel that,
yeah,
too. More like you, Jimmy, than
like
Sinclair.
Kids. So like they were smoking cigarettes and drinking drinks while we were pregnant. So.
Oh, she's ready for me to have Val on because it's a favorite episode.
No, this is this episode. I think it's the episode where Stewie kills Lois.
It's
part
the Matthew
oh,
and Aaron
part
show.
One.
It's not the Family Guy show.
So if
like,
people are listening, do you know how many listeners I just lost? Still going, shit.
Oh, she's
it's
right.
The
that's
Stewie
the
kills
episode.
Lois episode. Gotta go.
Gotta go.
All right. Good job, though, sweetheart. Bonnie and Clyde, December 8th and 9th. We're going to be bringing Lee back in with Val. You want to go get Val, and we'll do this
awesome.
Thing. Jimmy, so
thanks,
thank you so much, brother.
Absolutely.
If I don't see you before I leave, I'll walk on to the best, man. I love you, man. Hey, go get some food or something. Yeah. All right. That was Jimmy Dumont and Sinclair Dumont. What a sweetheart she was. Bonnie and Clyde, December 8th and 9th,
so
A&E,
are we never...
Lifetime, and I got to do all the plugs here. A&E, Lifetime, what's the other one? History. And then after that, we have... No, what's that role? Oh, that's...
Aaron. So what... I can't list all the things he's got coming up.
Okay, well, that's what I'm trying to do. Treme, December 1st.
Okay, so we got
final season.
Treme.
Okay, I mentioned Horror Story already aired. Nashville next week.
Okay.
The Butler's already out. You could see the Butler in theaters now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Dallas Buyers Club, which goes right on the 22nd.
Is that everything?
That is everything.
Jesus.
James Dumont, my dear friend from Chicago, and his daughter Sinclair, Bonnie and Clyde. We're about to bring on Val Lorne. Val is in Sal Mineo is the...
written and directed by James Franco.
Right. Is the actor... you may remember from Exodus or Rebel with a Cause.
Uh-huh.
I believe he was nominated for both.
Uh-huh.
Val absolutely kills it as Sal, and we're going to have him on right now. It's Video On Demand, Tribeca. Thank you very much, Tribeca. And come on, Val. Yeah. I don't know why he's standing back there like it's wrestling, playing theme music, and he's going to come down the aisle and hang out. What is going on, brother?
A 6-2. This is the best radio station location in the game.
Oh, shut up. Yeah. Is it really?
For guys listening,
it's
I'm
pretty
in
great.
The middle of a pizza joint.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, you
a
are, brother.
A dish pizza joint. So
yes, you are.
This is rad.
I got to tell you, I watched this film, man. You really are Sal.
Oh, well, thank you.
Come on, man. Listen, obviously this thing is done indie, right? Okay. How many days did you shoot this film, Sal?
Very fast. I hesitate to tell you how fast.
No, don't hesitate. Tell me how fast.
People
I think this is great for the process.
For us to shoot this film.
Okay. So how do you get into a character where there's not a ton of dialogue in the film? It's not dialogue free. I mean, there's talking, but it's not like every scene. There's a lot of watching, Sal. Okay, you would agree that's a fair assessment. You would say probably like I'd say 70-30. 70-30 talking and 30 talking in action and 30 you're watching Sal. Okay. How do you get into a character like this when you're shooting so quick, you're not doing it for a ton of money, and you don't have the time to really like get all method?
I was lucky to have a few months.
No, you're talking to the mic.
Yeah.
Into the mic, Val. What are you doing to me here? There you go. You're good now.
All right. I was lucky enough a few months to
Okay. You did.
Yeah. So
how did this come about that you had a few months? Let's start there.
I got a text from James Franco saying you're going to play Sal Mineo. Cool.
That's it.
That was it.
He literally see, this is the kind of relationship I'm missing, though, because I'm making a film right now, and I'm trying to cast the other lead, and it's like I don't have that guy I can just call up and be like...
Oh, the starring role coming at you from
right.
a...
All my guys that I know are Jimmy Dumont's age, which is 35, 36, right? And and I need a guy in his like mid-20s, early 30s, right? And I don't have that cat that I could just call up and be like, hey, brother, you're playing Sal. And that's cool that you guys have that relationship.
Yes, it is.
Now, did you do interior leather bar before or after this flick?
After, way after.
Okay, so you guys did this first together.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. So you get this text, and he's like, you're playing Sal. And you were like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, after staring at my phone for a little while and wondering what is going on.
That even mean?
Joke or what the deal is.
Or if he's high and he'll forget tomorrow, whatever.
Believe it or not, that dude does not touch alcohol.
Really?
I mean, he drinks water and coffee.
Jeez.
You know, that's pretty much the extent of it.
Really?
Okay. That's depressing. You just ruined everyone's Pineapple Express fantasy,
I'm
though,
sorry,
by the way.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Okay. So explain to me then, all right, he says you're playing Sal. So you have a couple months to prep for this, but did he have a script right away?
It was based on a book written by Michael Greg Michaud, which is a fantastic book on
okay.
Sal Mineo. And for, you know, those of you who don't know Sal Mineo,
yeah.
Sal Mineo's, he was one of the...
first openly gay actors.
Definitely more than that, but definitely the first openly
yeah.
gay actor. But he was one of the five biggest stars
yes.
in the world
yes.
in the 1950s.
After Rebel Without a Cause, certainly.
He was the youngest guy to get nominated for two Academy Awards.
And then Exodus.
Exodus and Rebel
That's
Without
right.
a Cause by the time he was 20.
Right,
right.
And he was, you know, he broke records as a singer. He'd sell out stadiums and arenas around the world as a singer. He was a director, a painter.
Teen
a
Idol.
What's that?
He's a teen idol.
He was like the Justin Bieber of his
He
time.
Did one of the or most famous, he didn't do the actual painting, but he is in one of the most famous nude paintings ever.
Yes,
that's Sal, and I forget what it's called. Is it called Adam? It's
and he did that in Italy.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
I mean, this guy had to have bodyguards surrounding him because people would rip his clothes off of him. It was, you know, that level of fame that he had. And he very, very quickly, that turned into him couch surfing and trying to pay his telephone bills and, you know, keep gas in his car, which wasn't even his. You know, his friend had a rent-a-car place and would just let Sal use cars. And he had a huge, huge fall from grace, partly because he didn't hide who he was. And he came out and said, look, you know, don't label me. Don't call me a homosexual or a bisexual. Don't call me a director. Don't call me an actor. Just call me a human being. Call me an artist.
Yeah.
And everything very, very quickly changed for him.
It's very fascinating, too. This came into my life at an interesting time because I don't want to talk about it too much, but that's what our film's about.
We're making
a
movie, and it's labels being a bad thing.
Well, it's about my story, and it is about labels, and it's about and it's very funny because Sal did it, and he was kind of blackballed in a way. Now, maybe not blackballed, but then he got typecasted. You would say blackballed was like that's an accurate description.
They didn't. His friends and people who actually kind of worked with him would stay away from him after.
Really?
That. I mean, he was. Not only did the business that he gave so much to turn its back on him.
Well, what about Nicholas Ray? Because I don't know the story with that. Was Nicholas Ray cool with him? Because Nicholas Ray was cool with homosexuality.
Nicholas Ray was one of the coolest guys.
Yeah, right.
In the game.
Absolutely.
So what does it say in this book about Nicholas and Sal's relationship, though? Did they have one after Rebel?
You know, their relationship was mainly during Rebel, and Sal was only 15 years old at the time.
Sure.
So this happened about a decade later.
Yeah,
you know. So,
yeah, it all fell apart.
Kind of different. Yeah.
So Sal has this comeback, and this film's basically about his last couple of days while he's on his way to this comeback. In a way, he's doing a play that's actually getting really good reviews, and this is supposed to be like his break back in acting. And it's interesting; he's playing a bisexual character in the play. And this is kind of like Sal's last few days. And
yeah, it's the last 24 hours of his life.
Is that what it is? It's just the last 24 hours. Okay.
Just the last 24 hours, and he had spent about 15 years after that fall from grace in a very obscure kind of a lifestyle. You know, he was doing plays in like 50-seat theaters in the middle of the country for like college and, and dinner theaters. And this is like an Academy Award-nominated dude. Who was, you know, like much like this pizza joint, you'd see Sal in a corner, you know, doing a play maybe for $50 or $40, so he can make enough money to pay for his hotel that night.
That's
kind of,
right,
kind of deal. But he never fell into drugs and alcohol. He never got jaded. He never got bitter. He never ever stopped caring and loving his craft and his acting and his writing and his directing and his ambitions. He stayed with it and stayed healthy minded throughout the end of his life, and that's what made him a really, really special guy.
How much are you able to collaborate with James when you make this movie, not just on your character, but overall the movie?
That's one of the really cool things about James. It was all collaboration.
Okay.
It was all collaboration.
So what made you guys decide you wanted to shoot 24 hours of Sal's life, his last 24 hours?
Yeah,
you
know, doing it this way.
When James told me we're going to do the movie and we sat down and talked, he said, I'm going to make an unconventional movie about an unconventional man who lived an unconventional life. And I think that we can tell the world who Sal Mineo was by being with him, kind of a ghost on his shoulder on the very last day of his life.
Yeah.
And because of the things that he, in reality, happened to be doing on that last day, they were very indicative of the kind of man that he was and the way he had lived his life, which was in constant pursuit of, you know, what he loved most, you know, and that's a very human thing that I think universally everyone can relate to. So the idea was to really get to know him through that last day and find out who he was and where he was headed and what he was doing. And, you know, nowadays you can go online and you can find out all about someone in a matter of 5 minutes. And your normal biopic tells you about the person's ups and downs through their life and where they were born and when all these things happened in their life. But I love those.
It doesn't do them justice, though. It gets the major points down. But it doesn't really give you the feeling of the person or the essence of what they're about. Biopics in that sense are the hardest to do, the hardest to get right. And so many of them just don't really come up to the task. So shortening the timeline to a very minuscule part of the person's life is way more effective, I think.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there's only so much time, right? We get an hour and a half to make a movie about someone.
Right.
And if you're going to cover the span of someone's life, you can only kind of touch on certain points and aspects of their life. Whereas when we decided to spend Sal's last day on Earth with him, you really get to use that time to get to know the man, get to know the spirit, get to know the personality, get to know the behavior and the intimacy of kind of being with someone like that, you can't really get that in a movie because there's so much to cover. But in this movie, we felt like that's the road that James wanted to go down.
Yeah.
So that's
was this another film with natural lighting, or did you guys use lighting? Because we were talking about Dallas Buyers Club was all natural lighting.
We use predominantly natural lighting because the cameras that Christina Voros shot with, and she's an amazing cinematographer.
Sure.
She knew just what she needed and how much light she needed. And when we were interior and we needed lights, of course there were lights.
Sure.
But when we were outside, with today's technology, the sun gives you more than the amount of light that you actually
sure.
need. And they had to actually, you know, cut down on the light.
No, the stuff. I mean, I thought the places you chose to shoot in L.A. were interesting. They're not your common places, which I thought was cool. A lot in the hills, which is cool. And I thought they looked great. The shots, especially in the day in the hills, are outstanding.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that looked really solid. And you guys nailed the 70s look. And is that just something, how do you plan for that when you're doing something low budget? How do you plan for it to look 70s? Especially if you use a red, it's not ever going to look 70s. You know, so did you use, what kind of cameras did you use? I'm interested.
You know, I forget what Christina...
but it wasn't a red, you know that.
I don't remember if it was a red or not.
How many cameras? One or two or three?
Two cameras.
Two cameras? Okay.
Yeah, and I forget what she used, but there was definitely a plan that the movie's going to have that look. And whatever she did, God bless her, she really did capture that look and vibe and color of the 70s. And, of course, the wardrobe was really cool. And we started with different ideas, and everyone was dressed very 70s, kind of trendy 70s. Then we kind of brought it back and toned it down to a much more subtle kind of 70s style. And there was a picture of Sal Mineo that I based, you know, my wardrobe for the day off of. To the T, really, everything he was wearing. So, you know, that really helped.
So, the film opens, like, the first 5-6 minutes is Sal working out, okay? And I find this fascinating because of the gay subtext. Also, I mean, that's one of the things that I find very fascinating about this is James was really good at capturing the gay culture without the film being about the gay culture.
Mm.
Now, you're worked out. Were you that worked out before the movie, or did you get in really good shape for this?
Because I lost about 20 pounds.
You lost 20 pounds.
Yeah,
you lost 20 pounds of muscle? Because you're jacked in this, man.
You know, believe it or not, I got a hold of Sal's autopsy report.
Okay.
And he was 144 pounds.
Oh, I believe you.
And he had a very slender cut kind of a frame. And
so you had to trim.
I had to trim. I did a really...
How'd you do that?
I did a cleanse. It's called Clean Cleanse, which was fantastic.
Over how long a period of time do you have to do a clean cleanse?
I had a couple of months. So for that couple of months, man, it was...
For a couple months you did a cleanse?
Yeah.
How much food did you eat, bro?
You were doing that blue-collar cleanse that I did with the syrup and the lemon juice and the cayenne pepper.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
No.
This one's brutal.
This one's healthier and tastes better, right? It's supposed to be a little better tasting.
I ate only organic, and I ate only very specific things that were on this program.
How many calories would you say you were taking in a day?
I'll never be an
actor. Calories, but they weren't.
It wasn't over 1,000, probably, or 2. It's not your regular intake.
No. But
so how do you get the energy to go to the gym then and keep cutting down?
This cleanse, the way they've set it up, actually, my energy levels not only sustained themselves, I think that they actually went up.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Because it was so healthy.
My body was operating at 100% maximum efficiency, bro.
That's what it sounds like, though.
Because it was a seven-day-a-week training regimen that consisted of Pilates and yoga, very weights with very high repetitions,
man.
Tons of water.
I just thought, I'm watching this, and I'm like, because I've seen you in other stuff, and I'm like, man, Bell got really into this, brother. Or was he just, working hard? Working out, that's just what he's doing now. But it was for now. You found an autopsy, and you knew you had to be a certain way, and you wanted to be that way.
Yeah, I found pictures of him. You know, I saw thousands of pictures of him. And you know, the way Sal was in his life is not the way the world remembered him.
No.
I remembered him as this kind of teenage switchblade kid. But, in his 30s, he was very different. So I saw the pictures of his body, and I saw what he looked like and how much he weighed, and and what he had even eaten that day. His body, when they found him, his body hair was shaved, and I just wanted to approach his physical state as closely as I possibly could on the outside, while during that time on the inside, I had to make a lot of changes to my straight kind of behavior to try to catch his essence and voice and accent and, you know.
Is it fair to say that James Franco has given you a really big break?
Yeah, he absolutely has. You know, there are, you know, I've been acting for 15 years.
Yeah.
On wood, I've done some things that I'm really proud of, but there are things that do not necessarily reach a mass audience or people on the other side of the world or even on the other side of the country unless they're looking for it. They won't ever see. What's really great about working with James is not only does he have an absolute focus and love towards making something that he really believes in, but his projects get seen and people get to really, you know, be a part of, you know, the result of the things that he's exploring. So it's opened up a lot of doors for me, and doors that I didn't even know existed unlocked for me. So that's been amazing.
How did your guys' relationship even start?
James and I started out acting together at Playhouse West.
Really?
Repertory Theater
Company. Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Interesting.
So, he remembers you. He's like, you guys became friends, I'm guessing, right?
We were fast friends and collaborators from the very start.
So he's always known that you're an actor. No?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're trying to be humble. Okay.
I can't speak for the man, but we've always had a mutual respect for each other's work, and we worked a lot together throughout the years on stage and scenes and theater and plays. And even when we would do our own movies or our own projects, we would work with each other to rehearse the characters that we're going to end up portraying. So there's always been a creative collaboration there. And when he decided that he wanted to do Sal Mineo, he
knew you were the guy.
That I was the guy for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a similar look. You're a little better looking than Sal.
I don't know if that's,
I mean, anyone that's seen Sal at 36, much better looking than Sal was at that time. He looked very frail and old in his 30s. He looked sick.
Right.
And he wasn't. But he wasn't. He was supposedly all right, but he didn't look.
It's just he looked very different.
That's the other thing. We know him as like Exodus Sal.
Yeah, he was.
Where he's like this real good looking. You know? Yeah, right.
And he was. I think he's a very handsome man in his 30s.
He is.
As well.
He's good looking.
No, he is.
Definitely changed than how the world remembered him.
Yeah, but you look better in person than you do in the film, though. You did appear as Sal. Like it worked. I gotta say, here's why I'm so impressed with you, man. Because I'm shooting this film for a small budget as well. And the kind of detail that you put into this character and the kind of detail you guys put into this work, I really do appreciate that, like, so much. Because I know how much sweat and, like, you're not doing it maybe for anything. Maybe not making – you may be spending more than you're making to do a film like this. And – I just love that you love the art of it so much that that's why you're doing it. Because I think the most important thing when doing a movie, any movie, I really do think, is the art first and then the money. And then you prioritize everything else after that, but it's got to be because you love it first. Is that why this was, like, because you could be doing stuff that maybe pays more. You know, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to do the health flick, and I'm going to do interior leather bar. And both of those, not like they're rolling in dough. So what makes you make that decision other than James?
Sure. It's a combination of the people that I got to work with.
Sure.
Sal Mineo, someone that, you know, I've looked up to as an actor for a long time, and that's huge. The book was fantastic. I appreciate James's endeavors and his taste and his bravery in the areas that he likes to explore. So I was really interested in following him on that venture. And look, anyone who does, yourself and people listening, anyone who does something that they love, if you take great respect and pride in what you do, it really gets you through those hard times and sacrifices that you have to make in order to keep working. So that, you know, always comes first. And be it $10 million or nothing at all, in my eyes, the level of work and the concentration has to stay the same, you know, and money can't quantify how hard you're going to work.
That's awesome. You know? That's awesome. And you're also the type of guy, I think, that realizes if you get great roles, you just can't turn them down because it's going to lead to other stuff anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, I believe it to be true.
Yeah.
I don't really use it as my decision-making kind of instrument, because one thing that I've learned in the, you know, in this business, in this art form, in this career choice, is that you never can tell, you know, what's going to lead to what and
sure.
what's going to be heard about and what's not. For all I knew, no one was going to hear about this movie or see this movie.
Sure.
You know, and just kind of do the best you can, and then you hope that when people see it, they can appreciate what you did, and, you know, they join you for the ride.
So what else do you have coming up? That
Well, let's see. I was in Prague for 3 months doing a movie with Clive Owen and Morgan Freeman called Last Nights, which is going to be really, really cool.
That's good.
All right.
There's a payday.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, it was really cool. It's going to be a beautiful movie. It's an adaptation of this Japanese story called 47 Ronin about the...
Yeah, I know.
Right.
So it's an adaptation of that.
Cool.
And Morgan Freeman plays our master, and a group of us set out to avenge his death.
All right.
And it's kind of like Braveheart, but with a very different kind of a style, and there's swords, and I'm a dagger expert.
This
so
is, by the way, if you're listening, this is a no. This is no relation to the 47 Ronin coming out with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, right.
That as well is another adaptation of 47 Ronin,
or the wonderful Mizoguchi film.
But Val is saying his is better. No, yeah. I'm not.
Well, I haven't seen Keanu's, but I understand that has fantasy elements.
Sure.
And
have you seen the Mizoguchi one?
I have not.
Oh, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, terrific.
So tell me about Prague. Did you love it?
Prague was really cool.
Yeah.
That was my first time there.
What's great about Prague that was different for you? Like, what did you discover?
For one, the place is untouched. So during World War II, it was never bombed.
Yeah.
So it stayed exactly the same.
Oh, cool.
So it looks like you've stepped into a time capsule.
Really?
And you can't throw a rock without hitting a museum. And everything is
great.
Cobblestone.
Someone that loves museums. About time.
A California museum.
To suit any taste, every taste.
Right.
I mean, there's museums that cater to anything. I want to
talk
about the museum.
Okay. After the show, are we talking about these kinds of museums?
No. What's really funny is the whole reason, I guess, the movie we're doing is even happening is because of museums.
Right.
What happened was I started hanging out with a guy who would go to museums with me and stuff. Like, we would do stuff that my friends wouldn't do. No, not introduce me to it, but my friends wouldn't do it. He was busy, and, like, I could go do things. And then my friends pointed out to me, you guys are dating? And I'm like, no, we're going to museums.
Yeah.
We're hanging out. And, you know, our relationship evolved, and that's what happened. And it was a very opening experience for me, very much like the basis of Sal.
Yeah.
And that's why I find all very fascinating. It all kind of ties together in a weird way. But it's great that you brought up museums, because I'm like, I love museums. I would go to Prague in 5 seconds for 100 museums.
You'd
love pretty
it.
Sweet.
I would.
Yeah.
I would.
All kinds of. There's a museum of torture instruments.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Instruments
that's
that
awesome.
Used back in the day when all someone had to say is, hey, that person's brain, he's a witch.
Have you been to the psychiatry museum out here yet?
I haven't. The psychiatry museum?
It's owned by the Scientologists. It's about how evil psychiatrists are.
The whole thing is set up to ridicule and debase Scientology.
Sure, but
and,
there's a lot of cool, like, historical stuff in there. You just don't read what's written about it because it's probably slanted, but there's cool stuff there. And then there's a serial killer museum here, and then, of course, the science and industry museum here, and there's so many cool museums here, too. But Prague, where'd you go? What museums in Prague did you go to that were really great? What was your favorite?
You know, I'd have to say the torture museum was...
You liked it.
Fascinating.
Just because these instruments are just unreal.
Because you did interior leather bar, and you're like, yes.
That makes the whips and chains, the leather interior leather bar look like cotton candy.
Oh my God.
I cannot believe humans would do this to each other. So just the shock factor alone of the things I saw in that museum just blew my mind.
Can I tell you a secret? A friend of mine's friend worked on interior bar. And I saw some pictures from the set. That's going to be a movie.
Oh, yeah. That's coming out.
That's going to be fascinating. Stocking stuffer.
Yeah,
is that code for something?
Well, they're doing a DVD pre-release this Christmas, and it comes out in theaters early next year.
That's crazy, because I think there's probably a scene in the movie called Stocking Stuffer. So that's great.
It's more to that movie than Meets the Eye.
I know, but I saw some pictures of the Meets the Eye.
Okay, right. There's definitely that, too.
And I'm like... That is fascinating.
There's a lot that I have never seen before that I got to see on camera in interior leather.
And who's releasing that film, do you know?
Strand releasing.
Strand, okay.
Strand.
So you're going to get like a small, like limited theater release and then
with their
VOD
highly unsettling
stuff.
Logo that they put before the movie.
Yeah, right.
With the smoke.
It's right now it's playing in theaters in Europe.
It is. Okay.
And, yeah. And
Europeans
love
that.
America early next year, DVD. And
how are the Europeans taking to it? Do you know? Have you heard anything?
I don't. I have not
okay.
heard anything.
No one's gone to your website and sent you emails?
Well, they're all in French.
So you don't have time to translate them.
Yeah, I kind of see them, and they're in French, and, you know, I just hope for the best of them.
Okay.
Yeah, you have a website you want to tell people about?
Sure.
And well, check out your work?
Sure. If you want to check out some stuff, you can go to valloren.com. There's a link there for a movie I did called Help. I wrote it. I directed it. I acted in it. It came out of, like, a very weird tough time in my life, and I made this movie about a guy on a mission to save his dying mother's life, and it was very cool afterwards. I did not expect it to get the reception that it did. It won a bunch of awards, and I won a filmmaking award, and my real mom is in it. Thank goodness she's healthy, but my real mom was not an actor. I put her in it, so you can catch that on there and some random information. Of course, I'm on Twitter at Valloren at Valloren1, on Instagram under iSolo, Facebook, all of these things. So,
dude,
come on.
I love your attitude. I love it.
It's good.
It's
hey,
like, dude, it's great. You know, we do end up getting a lot of cool actors on the show
because
we try to grab like people we really like and like character actors we love. You know, like Jimmy Dumont there. He was eating some beef and. That went pretty quick,
went
Jimmy.
Went to town on the beef.
No, I don't think so, pal. I've been watching you while you weren't looking.
he knows what serious eating looks like living with me.
But what I dig is I think you really care about the stuff you do. I think pretty much every choice you're making. I mean, obviously, when you're doing the CSI, you're just getting a payday out of it. I'm sure you care about it, you know,
even
the personal stuff that you do, I find that to be awesome.
Thank you.
Because you don't necessarily have to do it. No, here's the one thing I will always give James Franco billion times credit for, and I've told people this, because, you know, there is a backlash on him that he's too much or doing too, you know, not putting enough time into things, whatever. I've heard it. And my defense always is for him is, at least he's doing it. He's doing stuff that's personal to him. And that's kind of, in a way, all that matters. So I think that's really cool. I think it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, he takes the time that he actually needs, depending on what it is that he's doing. You know, his approach and the reasons that he makes movies are for very personal reasons. He wants to explore new ways of telling stories and wants to explore alternative ways of making movies that are not available to the public right now. And he takes really as much time as he needs in order to kind of serve that specific vision of whatever it is that he's doing. So, you know, and he's doing a lot. He has a lot of ambitions, and he chases them. And that's something to, you know, I think aspire to. It's pretty awesome.
Well, I talked to Bruce Fretz of TV Guide. He's the articles editor of TV Guide, and he does their on-demand column and Cheers and Jeers. And Bruce and I, we were just talking about how blown away we are by your performance in this film. And he saw Interior Leather Bar at the New York screen with James, and he's blown away by your work. He thinks you're a great actor.
I love
great
that.
Actor.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about it earlier today. I think it's really cool. You're a really good dude. I hope I get to work with you. I think you're phenomenal, dude.
Thanks,
I mean it, bottom of my heart. On tomorrow's show, we have directors Gavin Hood, Ender's Game,
and
Kevin MacDonald, How I Live Now. You've also seen Last King of Scotland and Marley and
tomorrow's director's
Touching
Day.
The Void. Kevin,
today was Actors Day.
Kevin's awesome. Kevin's awesome. Gavin's awesome. Val, what's up?
If I could just
you got time, brother. You got time.
Oh,
go.
Awesome. Sal is now playing in theaters.
Yeah.
So you guys in L.A. can catch it at the Sundance Theater at the Sunset 5 on Crescent Heights and Sunset. It's on VOD.
And it's on Amazon. I was going to say, it's video on demand, iTunes, Amazon. It's called Sal. It is in select theaters in New York, too, right?
It will open in New York.
Okay.
It hasn't yet. But it's in New Orleans. It just opened in New Orleans. It's opening in Indio this weekend. And thankfully, knock on wood, the numbers have been really well. So
that's
it's starting
good.
To
dude, I'm so happy for you. That's so awesome.
Stuff goes, so that's really cool.
I'm glad people are getting to see your work. Because I think you're Listen, yeah. And you know what I really dug about your performance in this? It's not an impression, and it's not.
Right.
I mean, you really do character,
which
Sal.
Is very difficult to do.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
is. You know, I have such a respect. Never been able to do it. I wish I could.
Yeah.
But kind of the my approach to acting doesn't have to do with imitation or impression anyway. And it's
impression is for comedy.
I wish I can do it, and I think it'd be a lot of fun to do at parties. But
yeah, right. It's a party trick.
You know. Depends.
Yeah. Sometimes in comedy, yeah,
sure,
it's fine. It works.
Depending on the person, it's just never been my personal.
Like on SNL, it's you know? Great, you know. But if you were to do an impression of Sal, an hour and a half, I don't know, man. At some point, I think the best acting is when I can't tell you're acting. I honestly feel that way about every actor. And in your case, yeah, you're not. I did not ever sense you were acting, and I felt like you were being, and I thought that's awesome.
Thank
you,
you. Yeah, that was the hope, more than anything, to try to pass along, first grasp and fun, try to pass along Sal's vibe,
yeah.
his energy.
And I should say women should check this out because you're shirtless for like 20 minutes.
James has me in my underwear for...
Yeah,
right. this movie.
Yeah, James is like, dude's looking
starving.
Good. Hey, guess what? You're naked a lot.
Yeah.
A lot now.
Yeah, Sal did not walk around his house in pajamas and such.
Dude, how do models live? How do you not eat all like that and stuff?
Can't do it.
You know, if you guys check this cleanse out, it's actually not like that.
Clean cleanse?
You know, clean cleanse. You all have this.
I'm writing it down. You sold me.
I'm going to do it. I need to lose weight. He's a gym rat.
You know,
I'm
not getting paid for this clean cleanse. You're not getting paid for his clean cleanse. Now I'm promoting the hell out of it. I'm looking it up, and I'm going to probably buy it, and I'm going to look like, oh, man.
It's good stuff.
You sold me.
I think... Gwyneth Paltrow does it before every movie.
And that doesn't sell me on
you
it.
Know,
yeah.
Calm down. I'm the Gwynny you know, Paltz.
Yeah. She's a healthy-looking lady.
Yeah.
She's a very healthy-looking lady.
Yeah,
I like
doing it, someone told me that.
I don't know if I want to be that thin, though. That's too healthy.
Yeah.
Too healthy-looking, if
yeah.
you will.
Sorry.
Do you work out, like, all the time now?
You know, I grew up working out.
Yeah.
I grew up as a martial artist.
Oh, wow.
Boxing. And then lightweights, nothing too much. But I'm
like the stuff you did in the film, is that kind of your normal workout?
Not exactly, especially at that time, because I had to stop lifting weights in order to start slimming down to get in, you know, Sal's body frame.
So what inspired you guys to use these specific workouts in the film? Like, you're doing the pec fly, you're doing the weight, the skull crushers, you're doing all that. What inspired you guys to do that, or did you just decide, hey, we got a bench, I'm going to do some skull crushers? Or
James kind of let me take the lead on that.
Yeah.
He said, what do you think Sal would do? And, you know, show me some different
lateral pull downs you're doing, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Sal had two things about himself that really kind of helped identify and give his confidence. His confidence came from his sexuality, and his confidence came
sure.
from his body. So those are two things that he really made sure to...
That's where my
you know,
confidence comes from
of.
As well.
There you go.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to congratulate you, too. I forgot to mention this, and my producer, Pat Tobias, reminded me... The No Way Around But Through.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. And everybody's involved with that. Like, this is what I'm talking about, man. You don't have to do these personal projects that you're really loving to do. You know everybody, man. You're doing stuff with Melanie Griffith and Scott Kahn and Gary Marshall and Mike O'Malley. You're good, bro.
Yeah.
But you're still doing it. And it's just like, that's so awesome, man. It's
Thank
so
you.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's just-
Thank you for not giving a shit about the money, obviously.
You know, yeah, money's always great, and
yeah.
I believe that all that stuff takes care of itself and comes if you love what you do and take great pride and try to do the best you can and people like your work. You know, that stuff, you know, I think will come along with it. But theater has been one of the things that's always been there for me, where there haven't been movies. And
right.
We did this great play called No Way Around But Through that Scott Kahn wrote, and I directed and starred in opposite him and Melanie Griffith and Robin Cohen and Bree Blair.
That was at the Playhouse.
It was at
not
Falcon
the, not
Theater.
The Falcon, Gary Marshall.
On Riverside.
Great
Gary Marshall's
yeah, yeah.
theater, yeah.
Gary Marshall produced
yeah.
it. And right now...
How nice of a guy, Gary. He's the nicest,
fantastic.
Right? Jimmy, Sealer, Sinclair, thank you, sweetheart.
Hi, guys.
He was like blocks away from that theater, too.
Oh, he's so cool.
Yeah.
He's got his offices there in this big
yeah.
theater, and we play catch with him in the parking lot.
That's great.
Know,
softball or baseball?
Softball.
Yeah, he loves softball.
Yeah, he has softball games.
Obsessed with softball.
Yeah, he's awesome.
They've been doing that since the 70s. He was the guy originally that was putting everyone together in softball leagues. Like, it would be Laverne and Shirley's cast and crew versus, you know, Mork and Mindy.
I love that.
It was Gary that put all that kind of shit together because he's obsessed with softball. He's so obsessed with softball, he put it in Runaway Bride, and he plays the first baseman. Just so he can, like, play softball. Like,
yeah.
You got to see his overhead.
Softball, yeah.
Gary's just a really nice,
great guy.
And, you know, he's not, for a guy who makes the most Hollywood movies, he's really not Mr. Hollywood. Like, he's a really normal dude, right? That's why he has the Falcon Theater, though, in my mind. In my mind, I feel like Gary's like, all right, I did the Runaway Brides, the Valentine's Days, whatever. This is his way to really release the artistic side.
And he does.
Is that fair? Is that fair,
around.
Yeah?
Yeah, he does all kinds of really cool theater out of there.
Yeah, yeah, they just did the show with Kevin Pollak, and Nick Gersey was there. I forget which, that was the one about Billy Wilder.
Right,
and,
right.
And who was the other guy that was in it?
Oh.
I forget the
No, I don't remember.
I forget who it was about. But I heard that was great, and yeah, it's awesome, man. Well, you know, Val, I'm so happy you came by and did the show, man. It was real great pleasure to meet you. And I'm serious, and you'll be way too big of a deal by then, but I'll be sending you work.
I'm coming back to see you guys.
Definitely.
This has been the coolest.
I'm in Chicago in 2 weeks. We're out of here.
We're
going to
be
I'm going to go make my film.
Making our thing, so I have no problem in Chicago.
Well, then that is a done deal. You can come anytime you want. And yeah, man, I'm just so happy. I know I'm gushing, but I don't do this on the show unless I mean it. Like, you are great in this role.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Swear to God, man. Swear to God.
Thank
you're
you
great.
Guys, please go see Aww. It.
Thank
oh,
you
hey,
so much.
Yeah. One more thing. Speaking of
sure.
theater, I just directed a play that opened last week at Playhouse.
Is
West
it going on right now?
It's going on right now. It's called 100 Days of Yesterday. And
when can I go?
It's Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 7, whenever you guys
want to
go.
So I can go Saturday.
Yeah, just let me know. I'll set up seats for you and get it taken care
of. Really?
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh. And for everyone out there,
right.
Let me... $10 so everyone can go.
Hey, we can afford that, can't we, Matt?
100 Days of Yesterday.
Hey, yo.
And what's it called?
100 Days of Yesterday.
100 Days
by
of
Scott
Yesterday.
Kahn. It's his newest play.
Love
it.
Got
these two great actors, and it's a little 50-seat house. It's at our home theater.
Scott's got a little writing career going. It's kind of interesting.
Scott's made some good movies, too.
I know. Yeah, absolutely.
I like Scott's indie movies he's done. Listen, I really, really dig Scott.
He's
think
cool.
He's really underrated.
Yeah,
Hollywood
do.
Still has not
underrated
of what he's about.
Because,
he's
you know, he's a good-looking guy, and he's James Caan's kid, so he gets offered, like, you know, the stuff he's doing on Hawaii Five-0, which is great, pays the bills, and gives him the opportunity to do stuff like this. That's why he does it. But people don't realize he's done some indie movies that he's written that are great. He's done some theater work he's written and he doesn't even star in that he's great.
Right.
A dozen of
he's but honestly, that's the type of dude where I'm like, he doesn't have to be that guy. That's when you know a guy's in the business for the right reason. He's Jimmy Caan's kid. He does not have to do shit if he didn't want to.
No.
He could ride his whole career off of being James Caan's kid. No. The guy is passionate about his art. And that's why he's doing this. And
yeah,
I think that's awesome.
He'll work 2 weeks on Hawaii Five-0, 10, 12-hour days all week. And the second there's a gap in his schedule, he's on a plane to L.A. where him and I are directing this lab at a Playhouse, a little 50-seat theater, and he's spending all day, every day of his day off in the theater putting plays together.
Yeah, I love that.
Plays.
Cool.
So I love
wow.
that.
What a commitment.
By the way, another guy that doesn't get enough street cred that you guys did something with, Mike O'Malley.
Oh, you do.
Dude.
Mike
yeah.
He
right.
is the coolest dude ever, first of all. Nicest dude ever, second of all.
Yes, he is.
Third of all, criminally underrated. And he was so good on Justified last year, he should win an Emmy. Straight up.
He's amazing.
I don't care about awards and shit, but if I did care and he didn't get an Emmy, I'd throw a fit.
Yeah, he's amazing. He produced No Way Around.
That's right.
Gary
That's
Martin.
Why I brought it up. That's so great.
And the play I did that Scott Rowe called Two that as well. And he
who knew Mike O'Malley does plays, right?
Right.
Right? Am I blowing your mind?
Yeah.
Plays out.
Mr. Guts himself, he does plays,
yeah.
right? You know, right?
I was
Guts.
20 years old working on one of his plays called 3 Years from 30.
Isn't that awesome?
He's a great player. He's multi-talented, Mike O'Malley.
Dude, I think that you're obviously working with the people that are doing this for the right reasons. God bless
you've
you,
got,
man.
You've got pretty much like a troop going.
Yeah,
so that's a good
but that's what
idea.
You need.
Yeah.
That's what you need. Like, you want to keep working with the same people because you trust them and you know they're going to be reliable. Because when you're doing things for a little money, reliability and commitment, two keys. Like, I'd rather work with someone good that's reliable and committed than someone great who half-asses their work.
Right, right. Yeah,
is that
like
fair?
A family. Everyone's got a like-mindedness of wanting to put out good things and
caring
about
great.
The things we make.
Well, I'd love to come by Saturday for the play. I put it in my thing and everything. I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I haven't seen some good theater in a while either, so this would be great.
Come on down. It's a little intimate show, but come on down.
I'm totally cool intimate.
Sounds good.
As long as no one's on their phone texting.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We'll allow that.
Good.
Val Lauren, the movie Sal, VOD it. It's also in theaters in L.A. and New Orleans right now. But in L.A., you could see it at Sunset 5, which I recommend. Because it's probably the best theater in L.A.
Yes, it is.
I think that's a fair assessment. It's the best theater to go to in L.A., Sunset 5.
It's one of the better ones. I look at it's the best theater in that area, let's say that, as you and I are not big ArcLight fans.
No, we're not.
It's basically a restaurant to order food from in there and take to your
Well, it's
awesome
like
sandwich.
What the ArcLight should be is the Sunset 5.
True.
Yeah, Sunset
that's
5
what it is.
Great.
That's what it is.
But we're also opening in Indio and New York soon, and VOD and On Demand and iTunes and Amazon.
Indianapolis?
Indio by Palm Springs.
No.
Oh, okay, all right.
Indio, wait, which Palm Springs? Gay Palm Springs or Jew Palm Springs? Florida's Jew Palm Springs. Gay Palm Springs is out here.
Oh, Palm Springs, L.A.
Okay, Gay Palm Springs.
Yeah,
all right, that makes
LA.
Sense.
He
that's,
wasn't
a good
say,
that's a good market
he's too nice
for you.
To say either one, but we get
that's
it.
A good market for a movie about Sal, is Palm Springs.
I just thought you had a really cool abbreviation for Indianapolis. Like some cool... Like,
No.
Like,
I knew what he was talking
about.
I knew what he was talking about, but I didn't know if he meant Jew Palm Springs or Gay Palm Springs.
Right.
That's why I call him, because I'm so offended that I can't say Florida Palm Springs or California Palm Springs.
If Jewish and gay, which one do you go to, if you're both?
Depends where you live.
Okay.
Depends where you live.
Okay, all right.
I mean, if I'm Jewish and gay, I'm not going to fly to Florida to see a movie. I'm going to, you
you're
know.
You're going to go,
I'd go to this one. Thank you so much, Val. Right.
My pleasure, guys.
And tomorrow, once again, I want to remind people, tomorrow, Gavin Hood, Ender's Game is in theaters right now. Sosti, Rendition, great director, and then another killer right after that, Kevin McDonald, who's done some of my favorite films of the last 10 years, documentaries included. He did a great Mick Jagger documentary, Marley, Touching the Void, but then he's also done great narrative fiction, including State of Play, the adaptation I loved, Last King of Scotland, which I thought was dope, How I Live Now, which he's doing, which is in theaters right now with Saoirse Ronan. I think that's right. It rhymes with inertia.
It rhymes with
Saoirse? That's right. Saoirse Ronan. No, she told me yesterday it rhymes with inertia.
Okay,
that's what she said.
Okay.
I'm telling you what she said to me, inertia.
It's pretty cool.
I guess.
That's what she said.
I think she...
And I will be at Flappers tomorrow. The show's at 7:30. Little room.
Are you gonna be any good?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's gonna be dope, as you put it.
Yeah,
you,
but don't send my fans out for your bullshit comedy. That's
it's
no
not
good.
Gonna interfere with the show. It's gonna be after the show. The show's
all right. He promises it's good. He promises it's so good.
God.
He will pay for your ticket if you don't like it. Right?
Yeah.
Guarantee?
A little niche I'm trying to scrape for myself.
No
That's
money.
All I want.
I'm getting
That's
you people to come.
What are you doing?
I'm offering them the money back guarantee,
money
right?
Money back guarantee? No, I can't pay that out of pocket. No, I'm on a tight budget. I have to reuse dental floss because of our artistic
endeavors. But you're
going
to be so great. So it doesn't,
I'm gonna reuse
dental floss?
Yeah, that's
is
how
the truth
bad
thing?
Money is situation.
All right, I really want too much information.
I wash
too.
It.
All right. Oh, you wash it. Okay.
It's, yeah.
You
called
don't
struggling.
Hang it like that.
This is what you do. You move out here. We don't have, Val's talent.
You wonder why you're single.
Oh,
no, you don't.
No,
you use dental floss.
Yeah,
I mean,
I do. Yeah,
that's
listen, because there's no money. Because there's no money, people.
Sorry,
Flapper,
7:30. Family Guy's on the TV.
Yeah.
Dude, every guest we have is way more in the Family
Turn
Guy.
Turn the damn TV off.
All
for
right.
Christ's sakes.
Thank you very much, Val. Please
thank you,
go
guys.
See Sal,
right.
Everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow, 4 to 6 in Pacific time. If you don't know what that means, type it in. Have
Salminio
a good night.
Lives.
Google for brains.
Salminio lives.
Thanks, brother.
You guys are bad ass. All right.